To chair the meeting for today.
Yes, second the chair.
Thank you very much. We have to look at the end. Examined by all of us. I know that was supposed to be the question of accountability, but there are two main items. The first is the judgment of the government by the stakeholders, by the department, the second part of the agenda is the progress report on the implementation of the regulation for the appointment of municipal managers and district managers. I guess that would be it. But before doing so, it may be a good idea just to get everyone to introduce himself or herself and to say briefly what is it that they do to the organization that they represent. We don't have the scripts, it's just only the explanation. But just quickly to state who you are. So my name is Thomas Daniel Masondo. I'm a member of the COPTA committee. So I'll go this way and we'll end on my right. So I'll just go that way. When we reach you, go to the back. Then come up front again.
Shirin Kasim, Committee 83. Namo Nchikalo, the government office.
Nikola was a member of the committee.
Oh, my name is Enoch Mintera. I'm a member of the committee.
My name is Abraham Buleta. I'm a member of the committee. I'm David Sanchez, a member of the committee.
Good morning, members. My name is Ali Boilunga from the Department of Higher Education and Training, Chief Director.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Goyas Konde from the Department of Higher Education and Training.
Good morning, members. My name is Kuku Dlamini. I'm the CEO of LGT Teacher.
Good morning, members. My name is Nabang Mandela. I'm the administrator of the LGT Teacher.
Good morning, members of the committee. My name is Riano Chungu, representing Salga, in my capacity as an officer.
Morning, my name is Donovan Blackis. I am a COO at the LGCT.
Morning, members. My name is Kulehane Mkize, CFO at LGCT.
Good morning, honorable members. Correct to do from Salga.
I'm the Sogomani committee researcher.
Good morning, members. Sigile Shabang from Salga.
Francis Rata from Salga.
Christian Taylor from Salga.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is DG Gosnell from the district office of COPTA.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Teboho Motlasoping, the executive manager responsible for Ministry of Administration and Resources from the Department of Corporate Governance. Good morning, committee members. My name is Timothy Reddy from the Department of Cooperative Governance, from the Chief Directorate looking at Local Government Capacity Coordination.
Very good morning, honorable committee members and colleagues. My name is Chanel Smajit. I'm the Deputy Director General in the Department of Cooperative Governance, looking after regulatory systems, support to provincial and local government. Apologies and greetings from our Minister and Director General that could not join us this morning, Chairperson.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Utama Chada from COPTA. I'm part of Apache Vision Visa.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Craig Oz. I'm a journalist with Independent News Papers.
My name is Ipo from Sanga Parliamentary Office.
I guess everybody has introduced himself by herself. If not, please do so.
Good morning. My name is Mike William Novalta. I'm a researcher from the Catholic Parliamentary Office.
Good morning. I'm Yunus Emmons from the PMG.
How about everybody? Yeah. Having done that, let us just go through the apologies one more time. I don't know that he did speak about the own question of the minister and the DG, but we'll just repeat it again.
Chairperson, our Minister, Minister Pravin Gordhan, and our Director General, Mr. Busi Madonsela, send their humble apologies that they could not join us today. Apologies have been formally submitted to the Secretariat.
Any other apologies?
Please, apology from the Minister of Higher Education. He wanted to join us at the meeting, but he has prior meeting schedule, and then there's an apology from the chairperson that's attending the press meeting, and an apology from Mr. Kembo. He's not feeling well.
Thank you very much. We are just having done that, that will get back to just formality again. Are there any problems? If anybody has a problem with that, and anyone wants to amend that and remove an item, add an item, you know. Can I just double check? And the agenda as has been amended now, we have introductions, apologies, and what appears on agenda number one becomes number three. What appears as number two becomes number four, and the fifth item is closure. Are there any amendments?
No.
Yeah. What is the agenda? Thank you very much. Welcome. We are now at agenda item number three, briefing on capacity building in local government, and the stakeholders that listed there will make their presentations. We then have some questions and comments, preferably, not unless there is an objection, after everyone has done the presentation.
So we'll do all the presentations, and then we'll open up for comments, questions, and discussion. So we'll start with the Department of Corporate Governance. Are you ready?
Yeah. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. We have shared the presentation with the committee and it's been circulated. I'd just like to take a few moments to emphasize some key aspects of this presentation. So if we can go to the first slide. That's just an outline committee of what we'd like to talk through with you. And we will emphasize some of those points more than others. If we go straight into the background on slide 3, you know, this conversation must be located within the context of the transformation of local government, which is an enormous and very complex undertaking. We also appreciate that progress has been made, but there's still a long way to go before all our 278 municipalities are optimally functional. And we also appreciate that despite there being a wide range of programs and initiatives from government and statewide as a whole, large amounts of money has been spent in the name of capacity building and skills development from a number of players across the spheres. We are not seeing the kind of impact and return on investment that would make logical sense for the kind of money that has been spent today. So we are doing a range of things wrong, and we need to shift beyond that. There's also an increasing number of technical experts that have been deployed, and we're seeing some of the good work that these technical experts are doing, but also some of the unintended consequences of growing dependency, and when those experts need to be extracted or their term comes to an end, the municipalities often fall back to a scenario where they've been in before. So there's also some concerns in that strategy working for us. The current designs and hands-on support approach, has led to some of these perverse outcomes. Experts has become an industry in and of itself, where the experts earn more than the people working in municipalities, and that leads to an exodus of the very technical people that we need in the municipalities for their capacity to be built, you know, go and sign on as experts. And there's a lot of gap-filling measures that have not had the desired impact and created further operational shortcomings. And municipalities don't have the support for learning and improvement at the scale and intensity that is often required and the duration. We say that a lot of our interventions got to be in it for the medium to long term. The short-term interventions don't work well. And programs, often just treat the symptoms of the failures rather than the underlying causes, where a lot of government players are very busy, but it's all the symptom treatment. And the further slide on background. So we are saying all of that said, we take knowledge that there has been a lack of strategic prioritization of support based on municipal needs. And the emphasis here is on municipal needs and not what province or national imagine or diagnose the superficial level of the problem to be. There's not enough that's been done to build the capacity of provinces and districts. That's been a key weakness in our efforts today because we sit with weak provinces in a number of places as well, and they are unable to fulfill constitutional obligations in relation to municipalities. Not enough has been done in that regard. Limited performance on monitoring the capacity building programs or independent evaluation of the effectiveness. And there's been no clear mechanism for managing the transition between providing support and when it becomes a full-scale intervention. And the logic goes that because our support has either been absent, negligent, or non-effective, therefore, intervention then becomes a requirement. But also the converse of that can also be true, where certain stubborn governance problems continue. No matter how much support you're going to throw at that institution, it's unlikely to yield the kind of results that's required, and hence intervention should be the preferred scenario. There's also poorly defined roles and responsibilities between different players. And that has also caused for wasted energy and resource focus. So we call on the commonly shared understanding of not just capacity building in order to ensure all efforts are directed at local government services for the same development agenda, but we're also calling for a shift in focus and not just talk capacity building, but talk institutional capability building. For too long, our focus has been on the individual that should have come to the job with a set of basic core skills. And we need to look at how do we build resilient institutions for the long term, which is a core pillar of our Better Basics program. Chairperson, just some important points is that to remind ourselves on slide 5 on the macro context. And I won't go through all the points on the slide. This is stuff that you as a portfolio committee know and appreciate very well. But just what informs this important area of work? Section 154 of the Constitution, Section 155, the Structured Act, and the Systems Act in particular, you know, compels us to do very specific and deliberate things in terms of our duty towards building the institutional capability of municipalities where both national and provincial government have a very specific role, and also assign some very specific powers to the Minister of Cooperative Governance in terms of the Systems Act, and also the role of districts in terms of the Structures Act. And we have not, you know, yielded the benefits of where we've had strong districts really articulating the intended role in this legislation. Slide 6. Then we just want to reflect on our understanding of our respective mandates. We outline there for you the COGTA mandate, the Department of Higher Education mandate, and then further on also the SALDA mandate, as well as the local government CETA mandate. And if I could just focus on one of the key aspects of the COGTA mandate of slide 6 again, is that we need to develop and monitor the implementation of national policy and legislation that seeks to transform and strengthen key institutions and mechanisms for governance to fulfill our developmental role as a state. We also need to develop and promote mechanisms and systems and structures to enable integrated service delivery, implementation within and across government, and promote sustainable development, right? The Department of Higher Education, if there's anything that we've misunderstood in the way your mandate is framed, dear partners that's in the room, you will help us along. But that's how we depicted the higher education mandate. I'm not going to go through that, as well as SALGA mandate and local government CETA mandate. It's very often that we, you know, get consensus around our understanding of these different mandates and how these different mandates interface and cohere and how we all play on the same field and choreograph and complement our different movements rather than, you know, own players smashing into each other and we scoring own goals. So there's a lot of further conversation that often needs to happen there. What we have found is sometimes where there's notions of unhealthy competition between the state players, where we lose a bit of focus, we're not all sharing the same game plan. We're moving on to slide 8. So this just gives us a menu of different capacity building strategies, plans and programs, which has been galore over the past 15 to 20 years in our experience as a state. You know, we say everything that we need to do need to be framed within the NDP Vision 2030. We know that we've got a human resource development strategy for South Africa from 2010 to 2030, the National Skills Accord, the Skills Development Strategy, that the Department of Higher Education is leading on, the important work that the local government CETA is doing. And then there's also a list of specialized strategies, plans, and programs as listed there from A through to M. And you can see that this is an important area. Many people are giving important energy, resources, and time to this. But somehow, why aren't we getting the results that we need and that we want to the same extent or to the scale that's required? Honorable committee and colleagues, the slide 9 just gives you a diagrammatic picture of what we're seeing, kind of coherence and focus that we need to bring together amongst all of us as important players in this space. So taking a holistic view, right, we're saying we've got to ensure that the institutions we are trying to strengthen, our municipalities, our districts, our provinces, our own national institutions, you know, functions within a very complex and demanding enabling environment, Chairperson. And that enabling environment ranges from challenges, be it, you know, demarcation choices and decisions that it made, the legislative and policy context, the fiscal powers and constraints, you know, affordability issues of service delivery, the political climate, regulations, and a range of other things as listed there for you on that slide. We also think the institutional capacity is an area that we have not traditionally focused on well as players together. We focus more at the expense of just individual capacity building. But we want to ensure that we build institutions for the long term, and we want to get more focus on that amongst ourselves. And then there's also, you know, the continued individual capacity building, but the key shift that we are ready to make now, that we are absolutely compelled to make, Chairperson, is that we can no longer spend every cent that we have as a state and prioritize individual capacity building. We are saying we are training people that should not have been recruited in the first time and trying to train them into competence. We're saying with the advent of our regulations that came in on the 17th of January last year, people need to come to the job with a basic level of competence. And therefore, yes, proper training and specialized training for ongoing development and learning as part of the employer's duty and responsibility is important. But we can no longer train a person for basic competence, right? Especially when we're recruiting senior managers. And that's a key shift that we bring to say that that money needs to be freed up and redirected and refocused to saying, where's our priority areas of focus? So that people invest, you know, also in their own development, and also we look at where's the middle and bottom tiers of the institution that needs a lot more focus and attention, where the gaps are, and not just an over-focus on the top. We're moving on to slide 10. So I trust that you all are very familiar with the slide about the essence of Back to Basics and the five pillars of our Back to Basics approach. I'm sorry that the color on the screen don't show it, but your hand copy shows that very clearly. And the conversation that's focused on here today links on a number of different pillars, but primarily around building, you know, resilient institutions to build and maintain sound institutional and administrative capabilities. And all these other ones link into that very directly as well. Slide 11, now back to basics priorities. It's important to focus in on that. So part of what we're doing there is we're monitoring very vigorously this, the filling of vacancies with competent personnel, top six positions in terms of regulations, so that we can check the levels of compliance and intervene where there's low or no compliance or partial compliance. We also work closely with TALDA to monitor the functionality of local government forums and identify weaknesses and intervene. National and provincial government to support to municipalities need to be stepped up so that we get some more impact there as well. And we also, you know, working to develop and implement appropriate capacity building interventions. No longer do we want to have gap-filling measures where we're bringing experts where there are vacancies, because there can be no learning skill transference in that scenario. And we also want to, we are developing guidelines for shared services and intermunicipal cooperation so that we bring a number of municipalities in a geographic space together to benefit from capacity injection. Some key institutional capacity building programs are listed on page 12, on slide 12. Right. And those are some of the very important things that we're doing in those capacity program areas. On slide 13, and I just want to pause here for a little, Chairperson, on our coordination strategy. So we're talking about a radical shift in conscious coordination strategy and approach to focus on building institutional capability for the long term and thereby giving expression to our NDP vision of building a capable state. We're also talking about envisaging strengthened coordination capabilities led by cooperative governance and with sector departments and associate institutions, especially those active in the local government space. And here we're talking about National Treasury, Water Affairs and Sanitation, Human Settlement, Rural Development, Land Reform, SALDA, the local government, CETA, and higher education and others. Specifically here, we are saying our sector strategy becomes critical. You know, the Department of Water Affairs and Sanitation are doing extensive work in partnership with municipalities. And so does all of these other departments mentioned here and many others. And it's about what are their specific service delivery, sector-specific strategy for supporting and building the capability of municipalities. And are we bringing all of that together so that we can have the full picture of what's going down in a municipal space in the name of capability building? So part of that is saying we want to engage. We are in the process of extensive and quite an advanced stage of engaging all the sectors to put their sector capacity building and institutional development initiatives on the table and for us to coordinate and track impact from that perspective. And also looking at how do we clear the way for impact to be made. We also talking about identifying basic capacity building issues that impact on municipal performance, that is about clearing the path issues that I've just mentioned, and to promote integration of initiatives taking on a systems approach to organizational performance in municipalities, rather than just we doing our own little bit and we're not pasting the picture together and engaging much more actively with a coordination strategy that looks at, you know, tracking impact. We're moving on, Chair. On the next slide, it's just giving you a sense of the kind of back basics infrastructure that we've put in place. So there's much more work going on that we're saying, what is the data that sits with all of the different sector players? What's the intelligence that sits with Treasury, with Water Affairs and Sanitation, that gives us all a lens into the institutional well-being, the governance well-being of particular institutions? If a municipality is failing on its water and sanitation problems, we would need to scratch a bit deeper to look at what are the governance problems that are giving rise to that particular scenario, right? And it's all interrelated. So we've got a real-time dashboard that we have aligned and cross-referenced with different sector departments to say, in terms of the five pillars of back to basics, and if you look at the water services issues, where's the cross-referencing and the correlation of some of these areas? If we are still building that up for other sector departments, but we've got a dashboard that we are cross-referencing on for different key services. The quality of analysis that we need to step up. Sometimes we sit as partners, individually we do our analysis, and then we develop our intervention programs based on that analysis, but we don't put that analysis to a level of rigor across partners and saying, are we seeing the same thing? Are we, you know, interrogating it from a multidimensional perspective? And therefore, is this the right set of interventions that we have confidence in? All of us seems to be running with our own set of interventions based on our own perspectives and analysis, and hence not having a common monitoring and impact focus. Chair, moving on towards the collaborative efforts. So we cannot do this on our own. You know, if any of us are still under the illusion that our brand is the best and we can do it on our own, we can continue failing. So we're going to need to shift into the kind of mindset, attitude, focus, way of working that's going to spell out collaboration throughout the way of working across all the partners here. We are very ready and keen and well-positioned to embark on what this requires from us as COPSA as well. And we've got individual experiences of collaborating with each other on a number of different things, but we seem to have less success where we're collaborating on a greater number of multi-party or multi-stakeholder or agent initiatives. some of the coordination mechanisms on slide 16 that is in place, that are yielding, you know, that has some utility to it. And we want to see, you know, what is it where there's either an over-complication of the coordination mechanism that we have in place. So the National Municipal Capacity Building Coordination Committee has been in place for a very long time. And previous presidential coordinating committees since 2000 have established this particular structure. And this is where all the parties and professional bodies come together. And this structure has been active for a long time. There has been criticisms about the functionality of the structure or the strategic focus of the structure, or the structure has been too big. We've also initiated a few years ago, Chairperson, a local government learning network to share best practice across all of the different players and for us to learn from each other, and that has been active. There's also a range of progress reports that goes to the Council for Human Resource Development of South Africa, and that's another platform where principals get together. We've got a gap skill, web-based skills audit tool that's been in place, and we've got some good data on there on what exactly is the status of skills in the different municipalities. Some municipalities have uploaded the information and updated it better than other other institutions. And on slide 17, just give them more information on the kinds of data that we sit with in terms of the skills audit. I'm not going to go into that detail, Chair. On slide 18, we're talking about CES and critical skills. And here it's important the role that our municipal infrastructure support agent play as an integral part of COGTA is to strengthen municipal technical capability for infrastructure services delivery. And they develop a sector-wide technical capacity building for local government strategy, or rather approach, and provide funding for the development of municipal built environment technical skills. They also work towards professionalizing local government officials in compliance with statutory provisions for technical professions, and facilitate lasting partnerships with public and private entities. The NISA focus for 2014 to 2019 are outlined there on slide 19, and it's important footprint work that they're doing around, you know, getting technical problems resolved, because we know that's a major service delivery headache that we have in a number of our municipalities. NISA's also got a number of capacity development programs that's outlined there for you, and there's some good work that's happening in this. A lot of young people and professionals and artisans are being reached through these different initiatives. I'm sorry, on your hand copy slide, it would show you much better. If we could make sure that our colleagues from IA Education just have a hard copy to see those programs, to look for linkages as well. MISA programs are further outlined there, ranging from technical training, mentorships, bursaries, artisan development, and so on. And we're looking for ways of taking this to scale so that we can get a cumulative impact. Also, MISA focus areas are listed on the slide to look at all of the different core technical areas that we are responding to. The coordination efforts that MISA has with a number of different professional bodies are listed there for us, Chairperson. And then lastly, Chairperson, the role of tertiary institutions that you've asked us for as well is to develop the qualifications aimed at strengthening leadership, managerial, and professional competencies for you know, traditional elected and appointed officials. We also want to align the course content to ensure that programs within qualifications are correctly focused to meet the needs of local governments for now and future, and result in improved performance. The Department of Higher Education, local government CETA, to support COGTA with the accreditation and quality assurance of qualification in related learning programs, and also to ensure that accredited qualifications and related programs meet competency standards of professional bodies like SACPLAN and EXA. And lastly, COGTA, supported by the Department of Higher Education, should coordinate the establishment of collaborative partnerships between tertiary institutions, SALGA, Treasury, the CETA, the National Skills Grant, and related sector departments. Chair, we will be happy to try and answer questions to the rest of our relatives.
So, colleagues and members, what is really encouraging is that we take notes as we go along. And identify key issues, key questions, key points that are raised in the debate, so that when we do come back to questions, comments, and discussions at a later stage, you are more than just ready to make your own contribution. So without the rest of time, we'll say, we'll move to LGC, and ask the colleague to make the presentation.
Thank you very much, Chair. Once again, good morning to the honourable members and to the other colleagues in the room. You would have noted, Chair, when we introduced that I'm here with the whole team from the LGC, the new CEO, is here with us as well as the other colleagues. Chair, thank you, and let's take the opportunity to thank the committee for once again inviting us to come and share the work we are doing as a leader, and together with our other important stakeholders in building capacity in the local government sphere. We were, Chair, guided by the issues that were highlighted in the letter of invitation, and it was mainly around what CETA is doing around its statutory role of the sector skills planning for the local government CETA, which we'll spend a bit of time on. It was around the issue of the relicensing of the CETA, which I will touch on very briefly now. And then the work we are doing to promote skill development in the sector and monitor skill development in the sector. Chair, and I'm glad that the department is there. There is not much to cover about the relicensing of the CETA beyond 2016. That's a matter the department is with. We are all awaiting a pronouncement initially for discussion with the rest of the sector and the world and country about the new landscape as well as the new national skills development strategy. And then later on, after the consultations with the country, the finalization of the landscape. So up to now, as all CETAs are, the CETA was established together with the rest of the CETAs through the Skills Development Act and started being operational around the year 2000. It is now in the third license, which will end, as we are saying. Beyond that, we will then be guided by what comes out of the deliberations that the department and the ministry are leading. Of course, our role as the local government sector is to operate within the local government sector, and we do that, of course, like all other sectors, guided by and operating within the National Skills Development Strategy and other pieces of the legislation and regulation that govern all sectors. We as the sector, we offer a range of occupationally directed skills development programs that include learnerships, that include apprenticeships, your artisan development, short skill program, the top-up courses that my colleague referred to, internships for young people who have recently qualified, work integrated learning for those who require work placement to complete their academic qualifications, bursaries as well as RCL and IS programs. Now, just to quote, in terms of sector skills planning, just to quote from the National Skills Development Strategy 3, which is the overarching strategy of all CETAs, CETAs play an important role in gathering statistics and other relevant information on labor market skills needs and training provision. That information is essential in planning to meet the country's skills needs and guiding investments in education and training provision. Now, this for CETAs is done mainly, not exclusively, but mainly through information that we put together in SSP, and that is done through mainly through information that we gather from municipalities through workplace skills plans. Of course, once the SSP, which is the primary function of all sectors, once that is done and we are clear what the skills profile of the sector is, what the skills needs are, what the critical and scarce skills are, then we take that and translate it into a strategic plan as well as the annual performance plan that then get approved by the executive authority. In brief, the purpose of the sector skills plan is to provide a sector profile. That's where we do an analysis of the workforce of the CETA across different characteristics, you know, check gender, race, skills profile, all of those things. That's where we do an analysis of the demand and supply within the sector and to determine the skills development priorities. That's where we identify sector-specific skills development objectives and goals that meet sector needs, including the craft skills needs of the sector. So we also identify the strategies to address the objectives and the goals. So we also identify activities that will support the addressing of these strategies and goals. We also have to develop an implementation and sourcing models for different activities that we identify. And of course, we have to report on performance against the objectives and goals. Now, as I said earlier on, key to developing the SSP are inputs that we receive from the workplace skills plans and the annual training reports that we receive from municipalities and other entities. Now, this is an important point. If you recall, even in the last presentation that we made, we spent quite a bit of time on this because part of the problem up to now, which has been different with the other sectors and other CETAs that one has been exposed to, has been, and to a lesser extent, albeit now much more improved, but continues to be the challenge of the credibility of the information that we receive from municipalities. Up to now, the local government CETA has been using a manual system of collecting of municipalities submitting workplace skills plans, which are always the challenges of human error, always the challenges of you know, not always being accurate in terms of the information that was provided. So as part of the response, one of the things we have to speak to is what we are doing to respond to the challenges that we are facing. Part of the response, which was really not a new innovation on our part, it was merely to move the CETA to be where our CETAs are. We have now moved, for the first time with these submissions that we've just received now, we have now moved onto a system, an online electronic system of collecting workplace plans and annual training reports. We've implemented the system. We have now successfully used it for the first time ever. There were some teething problems that will always be with any launch of any online system, but we do believe by and large the system is stable, the system is robust enough to at least allow us to receive information that is much more credible, much more accurate in terms of the contents thereof, and also the ability, of course, to be able to extract and process and analyze and start to process the information much more quicker. I mean, an example is that we had to submit to the department the raw data that we have received from municipalities. Now, with the system that we used to use before, and this is not an exaggeration, with the manual systems of submitting things manually, the CETA then had to, and that's what we found when we came to the CETA, we then have to employ the services of data capturers, and they would sit there for anything from 6 weeks to longer capturing the information so that at least it captures on whatever Excel spreadsheet to then start to process it. With the new system, we are now able to immediately start and start to move forward. There were still some challenges, in particular with the users of the system, the skills development facilitators, who had to input the system and they had to do certain things on the other side. And of course, you know, being the first time, although we spent a lot of time, money and effort, as point three is saying, training them, going to even district level and beyond that, where there were specific requests for support and training, but we still have some challenges there. So we hope that with the next submission and the more that the system is being used, we will actually have much better results and a much more close to being fully accurate information that we receive through that system. Yes, and we show that although in the local government CETA we've had some challenges, as I said. Unlike, I know that the department is always interested in this for the good reason that the information that must be collected is important. It's important for skills planning for the country overall across all sectors. So they are always watching the submission rate of workplace skills plan, because in other sectors, employers are still not submitting 100% as much as they should. The interesting thing is that with our sector, with all the problems that we have generally within the sector, but in terms of the submission of workplace skill plans, we've always had 100% or close to 100% submission. In other words, at the very least, in terms of ensuring that municipalities and those entities that are aligned to municipalities actually do submit workplace skills plans. And this is a trend that has always been the case even before we came with other interventions. What has started to change now with the new regulations that became effective in 2013, what has started to change is that some of the municipalities were found wanting in terms of compliance, because now the workplace skills plan is supposed to be signed off. So when it's not signed off by all parties, it is deemed to be non-compliant. So if you look at, for instance, this is 13-14 submission trending up Pandunalento. I'm trying to point. So you will find that you have all municipalities, all 70 head of them submitting workplace skill plans. But unfortunately, some of them, because they were not signed by all parties, would not be deemed as being compliant. So you still have, in terms of regulations, and therefore, unfortunately, and this is a matter that we spend quite a bit of time on, you know, in all forums that we have, because it does, unfortunately, it does harm, for want of better expression, in terms of their ability to access the mandatory grants and therefore to access funding for training of their people. But you've tended to, and what we find here, Chair, is that a lot of the times, and we find this even now, even with the 15-16 submissions that we've just received that we're still analyzing, you find that sometimes that compliance issue of all parties not signing, in particular labor, refusing to sign, it has to do with all manner of other things, not on the training of staff. And so, for instance, now I'm sitting with one where, because on the online system, they have to submit still the page where all parties have signed with all the signatures, they have to upload that, but they also still have to do an online submission, in other words, a one-time pin to all the parties who have signed to then also submit electronically and verify that they submitted it. So you find in one case, they find it, it's there, it's uploaded because it's uploaded by the SDF. Later on, they fight, my colleague from South may relate to this, they then have differences about other things, usually issues of salaries and other things, and then they say, well, we no longer sign off on that WC, that type of issue. So that it, what we find is that it tends to be affected sometimes by other issues that have got nothing to do with skills development, but unfortunately, because of the retirement, then it affects them that way. Now here, sir, as we always try to do, just to show the extent of the challenge and the need in local government versus what we are able to do as an organization, because I think sometimes sometimes it's easy for us to lose sight of the reality of the limitation of the resources that we have to deal with. But here, sir, all we are showing is that for the financial year 2014-15, we received as a visa a request for funding to the tune of 1.6 billion from municipalities for various programs, different things, across all the issues that we, or all the areas that we run programs in, whereas the budget of the organization was only the discretionary grant budget that is available to fund all these things was only just less than 400 million. So it's a discussion that we always have with my friend Shana from the department that the need is huge, the priorities are many, and we accept and fully accept, but we may not always, as this one entity, as this one organization, all the time be able to meet all the requests. Such that, for instance, at the moment we are in discussions with our good friends from Saudi, again about programs, very important, very necessary programs that they have applied for funding for, where unfortunately the request far exceeds the resources that are available. So we are trying to find each other on how best to deal with it now so that we can then deal with it in bits and pieces over the coming years, of course, depending on issues of licensing. Once again, and this now starts to speak to the challenges that the organization faces, which was a big theme that we had to address in terms of the request for the presentation. Here, sir, without going into a lot of detail about the numbers, here all we are showing is the performance, and we'll call it the performance, because issues of performance tend to get us all to stand up and listen. Here we are showing the performance for one financial year, performance being implementation of programs versus what has been approved by the organization. And it's as simple as, you really can't see on the screen, but I'm sure colleagues will have the hard copies. It's as simple as the first column A, which has been, is then broken down further down into 18.1 and 18.2, but under column A, those are the numbers, and this is numbers, actual numbers of people. Actual numbers of people to be trained. Those are the numbers that the CETA would have approved for this was the 13-14 financial year, for training, to fund their training. As simple as that. In other words, in that financial year, the CETA approved for the training of the 1,518 people, individual, across various programs. So we're just showing the numbers. So 18.1 being the employed officials, employed including in this case, and we always make this point, that for our purposes, all people we understand politically that's not the case, but for our purposes when we talk of employed, we include councillors because we treat them as people who are attached to the municipality, as opposed to 18.2, which is unemployed young people who are outside. So just for that, and not for it to mean anything else, just for the purposes of discussion within the CETA. 81,518 of those, and then 14,800 unemployed young people. Now, we then go into different, this was our analysis, different stages of things at that point, but up to when this was at the end, or towards the end of the financial year, up to that point, if you go to column G, 18.1, which is employed official, the implementation rate, we'll now talk about rate, in other words, of that 31,518 that had been approved for training, only 1,910 had actually either been or had started training, meaning that translates to 6% of what had been approved. The same with 8.2, which is 40,000 translating into 22%. Here we were talking to, or we're trying to show, as we've been trying to do, that although the CETA had lots of challenges and continues to have some challenges, capacity and otherwise, but when all is said and done, when the CETA has eventually done what it's supposed to do, and we still have a challenge, which informs now how we want to start doing things, we still have a challenge of serious difficulty by in the main municipalities and some of our other beneficiaries as well, to actually now do what needs to be done to access the funding. And a big part of that, Chairperson, simply revolves around compliance, ability to start to submit for the required numbers, all the required documents that are required for compliance and for audit purposes. And it's a matter that we spend a lot of time on with our friends from SALGA, with the municipalities directly. It is starting to improve, but it continues to be a big challenge. So what we then did at some point, and which is what we have been preaching since towards the end of the last calendar year up to now, was to say that instead of digging the CETA deeper and deeper into this quagmire that we're in, we then had to change the processes of the CETA. We had to change the processes of applying for the professional grants, and we had to clean up the backlog, because each year we were issuing grants and getting deeper and deeper into this, such that we were committing the funding. Each year we're busy committing the funding. Implementation would either not take place or would take place 18 months, 24 months, or even longer later on, and therefore the CETA as an entity would not be able to report a good performance against that financial year in terms of what was approved and funded that year. So we then started cleaning up all that we had up to that point, and we introduced a new system. Now here, Chair, I'll come back and talk about the new system. Here we have a few slides that just show the performance, that just show in terms of the different areas that I've already spoken about, of things that we fund, or programs and types of programs that we fund, which are not unique to us, your learnerships, your bursaries, skills programs, bachelor's and development. So I'm not going to spend time on this. We can discuss it when we have specific questions. But this slide and the next slide about learnerships, both registered as well completed, certificated over the last 3 years of the CETA, artisan development again, artisans entered, certificated skills program, registered, certificated. That was meant to just show, you know, the actual in some detail and in terms of some numbers of what the CETA has been doing over the last couple of years. And of course, as I said, we then spent a bit of time analyzing and understanding the processes that we have been embarking on or that the CETA has been using through things and trying to understand what needs to be improved. The first one of those was the whole issue of the workplace plans and how the information was not, the credibility and the accuracy of the information was simply, there were some small improvements, but overall was not improving, you know, with all the number of years, albeit there was some process or some attempt at bringing all stakeholders together and doing what we were calling at the time, evaluating WSPs. But it was not a substantive process. It was a very mechanical administrative process of checking whether different fields have been filled in and all of that, but not a substantive process that assisted with the information and improving the information for skills planning purposes. So we then followed a different process, having started with some of the changes that we wanted to introduce. And we do believe that that assessment that we did at that end of that financial year assisted us to really identify where some of the weaknesses were in terms of the information that we were receiving, in terms of the questions that were being asked, as well as to then assist us to improve the new template that we're going to be using for the new for the online system. Now, Chair, as we move towards closure, we then, as I said, at the end of last year, which we effected at the beginning of this year, we then started introducing what we believe will be a better way that will strengthen the organization. One, to be able to do proper planning and to do allocation on time, such that the work of the organization and the projects, which is the biggest thing that we have been trying to preach to municipalities and all our stakeholders, is that up to now, the way that the CETA has been managing grants, one started too late in the year. It started, municipalities historically at the LG CETA were submitting applications for discretionary grants at the end of June, when workplace skills plans were still submitted at the end of June, and then for the first time in 2013-14 were submitted at the end of April, when WSPs were submitted at the end of April. In other words, the CETA had always combined two related yet distinct processes of applying for discretionary grants as well as submitting workplace skills plans, which then meant that they received applications already late in the year. When they were receiving them in June, that meant that they received them already a quarter of the financial year, that financial year gone, only receiving applications, which meant that the process of evaluating them, responding to them, getting the compliance that is required in place, and ultimately projects starting would all be concluded. If the CETA was lagging, some projects would only start as the financial year was finishing. That was the model and the timelines that were not aligned. So one of the things that we changed is to say that, unlike before, municipalities will now have to apply for discretionary grants before the financial year starts. Ideally, we would have wanted to start to issue an invitation for application already last year, November, so that between then and March, the process of evaluation, due diligence, and allocations would be done, such that as the financial year starts, the projects are also starting. We managed eventually to issue an application in January, and this is a matter, Chair, if you recall, that we spent quite a bit of time on the last time we interacted like this. And we were expecting that it would even be much more difficult than so far it has proven to be, but the process is still open, so we also can't be conclusive about our analysis of how successful it has been. The municipalities requested an extension in terms of the period for which the window of applications remained open, which we reluctantly but eventually we granted, and that meant that only towards the end of April did we finish with the process of making the allocations. And other entities, all other different entities, non-levying entities, had up to the end of May, this is all illustrative, up to the end of May to submit all the documentation and the compliance, in Spartan have up to the end of June. It becomes important, Chair, without reducing this to a discussion about process, it becomes important at the high level of understanding that for the system to work and for the leader to be able to do what it's supposed to do, one, to support municipalities and for that support to become real, and then number two, of course, as an entity on our own as the leader, to be able to report within that financial year on the work we are doing. We all have to play ball in this thing. Historically, and with the thing that we are, with the request that we are having to deal with now already, the likelihood is that it's still going to be a bit difficult there, but we are committed to working together with our entities. I know that our friends from SALGA have always, including with the workplace skills plan, have always made themselves available to say that we must give them this information. They must know which municipalities are unable to either make these submissions and or whatever other challenges, so that also as the employer body from their side, they are able to support us in that regard. And that's one of the ways in which we work very well together. This night was just putting more detail and showing more dates on what I've just spoken about process. We move towards closer, Chair. The other issue that we had to speak on in terms of the invitation was how we as a CETA monitor and support municipalities at provincial level. I'm not sure if that word was used, but just to say how are we there for them, closer to them where they are. Now, here we just mentioned that, of course, the CETA, like all others, is a national organization with a head office in Gauteng, but we do have provincial offices that are spread throughout the country. Initially, we had 6 provincial offices, so 3 provinces were clustered together. Gauteng and Northwest is clustered and being supported by one office and one office staff. Northern Cape and Free State is another clustered province, as well as Limpopo and Mpumalanga. Since the department has started pushing us in the direction of ensuring that CETAs move closer to communities, that CETAs open offices in TVET colleges so that they are more accessible. We have seen, we have now opened 3 more offices. So whereas the office that supports Mpumalanga and Limpopo is a combined office that up to now happens to be also located physically in Gauteng in Tswane, but we have now opened an office in one of the TVET colleges in Limpopo, in the Mopane Southeast Effort College in Mapalaru. So we now have an office there. We have opened an office in the province of KZN in Richards Bay, because the KZN office, big as it is, that province, the office is in Durban. So we have now opened a satellite office in Richards Bay, as well as in the Eastern Cape. We have now opened an office in Tata, which is at the KSD TV College, because the first office or the main office of the CETA in that province is in East London. So we are really trying, Chair, to have as many offices and as many staff of the CETA as close to where the municipalities are, so that they're able to support them much more actively, so that they are more accessible to where the municipalities are. We have also, as part of reorganizing the organization and strengthening our function of monitoring and evaluation, we have now brought on board the function and appointed a senior manager monitoring and evaluation who will now lead us in terms of all the monitoring and evaluation work that the CETA needs to be doing, both internally for our own performance as well as on the program that we are running on the ground. As I said, the provincial staff are there to support municipalities. They hold regular fora with municipalities, with skills development facilitators in the main, but with many other forums, and they provide support in many other different ways that is required by municipalities. Of course, we have a reasonably, capacity-wise, it could be better, but we have a reasonably stable ETQA function that performs the function of ensuring that the training that we provide and the training that we fund rather than provide is provided to accredited training providers, that the quality of the intervention at all times is monitored, and we always make sure that we, you know, that the funds that are dispersed are going for the right courses and are going for what one intended. Now, we were asked to reflect on some of the challenges we face as an organization. I think we all know that the CETA had to be placed under administration due to some challenges that were faced, both governance and management. I'm happy to report that the CETA is now about to get out of administration. So at least over the last 2 years, quite a bit has been achieved to lay a solid foundation to put it back in terms of governance and management. We have pursued a turnaround strategy which was aimed at repositioning the organization to make it much more relevant and make it responsive to the needs of the sector. And basically what we sought to do, Chair, with that was to ensure that we make this organization one that is characterized by excellence. Excellence in the people that we employ, excellence in the operations, excellence in everything that we do. Of course, a big challenge that I would imagine is faced by all CETAs is that due to, one, the funding model of the CETAs, we are not always able to compete in terms of salaries and all. But with us in particular at this time, as we move closer to the end of the license period, that became a major factor in terms of our ability to attract the best people that we have wanted to attract, because we are able to offer people contracts beyond the life of the CETA. We are happy, however, that all those challenges, notwithstanding some very competent and very good people, led by the CEO who has now been appointed and other executives, were able to come and join the organization, and we have now stabilized it at least at the level of the executive level, and the focus now moves to ensuring that we are able to do the same with the rest of the organization, with the other level of employees within the organization. One of the things that our stakeholders have always told us was the key weakness, and we also shared that view, was the CETA's inability to communicate its programs, to always be there, to always be visible, to always be accessible. One of the things that we had to do, over and above all the other interactions that were led directly by the administrator, as part of reconnecting with the sector, as part of bringing the CETA back to the sector, getting the sector to be much more involved in the work of the CETA, to be much more interested and participate more. So we spent quite a bit of time and money on those things, but we've also now developed a proper communications and stakeholder management strategy that is aimed at assisting us, you know, to on an ongoing basis consistently be there and ensure that our programs and everything that we do and the work of the CETA and the reputation of the CETA is always kept alive. Because some of the people in some of the municipalities still complain that they still do not have a full understanding of what the CETA does and how the CETA can support them in what they are supposed to be doing, and that's what we intend to address with this communication strategy. Of course, another issue, Chair, that I'm sure all of us will agree that leads to and supports efficiency in organization is the whole issue of ICT, the usage of ICT. We have always sought to ensure that we turn around the very bad situation that we found in the LG CETA, where ICT platforms were very weak, were almost non-existent, and the organization was unable to harness the use of ICT to better deliver on work that we are supposed to be doing. We are paying close attention to that. I have already mentioned that one of the key achievements in that regard is the online submission of workplace complaints, and we are now moving to ensure that we address all other areas of the business in terms of that. Of course, governance and management, the Auditor General, tomorrow we are appearing before SOPA because our 2013-14 annual report, although we had moved the organization from a disclaimer, which had been the case before the CETA was put under administration, but we're still left with a qualification based on our schedule of commitments, dating back many years in terms of our ability to properly reconstruct and give the Auditor General the comfort that what was in the schedule of commitments was indeed accurate and complete and verifiable. So they did have some findings against us, and we have moved now. We have, in some instances, brought even extra capacity, especially in the finance unit, to assist us to ensure that key controls are in place, to ensure that processes are being followed, and that people with the right skills and the right competencies are doing the work that they need to be doing. And we really do believe. We are unable to pronounce now because we are busy undergoing an audit at the moment, but we really do believe that we have managed to move the organization in particular, across all areas, but in particular on the financial management side. I think our colleague from HOCTA has spoken about how we work together. We've always had collaboration across many different things. One of the things that I was very clear on when I came to the CETA was that I would not like for us, the CETA, and our key stakeholders, the SALGA on the one hand, the department, and even the unions, to see the CETA merely as an organization at which they go for funding, in other words, as an ATM, but that we must work together to ensure that the work of the CETA that we do, from the planning, from the sector skills planning, to all other special interventions that we make, to everything that we do, and to the quality assurance function that results with the CETA, that we always work together. And I think Shahad also touched on this, and I'm quite happy that I added some other points in the other presentation that I was looking at. So I'm quite happy that we, you know, at the level of conceptualization, at the level of the development of the SSP, and of course, to quite a significant level, I'm not going to speak to these, I think colleagues can see them, to quite a significant level at the level of funding, which is the primary role of the CETA, not primary, but a big role of the CETA, of saying once we've done all the planning and all the other things, we must then disperse these funds to ensure that the people, the intended beneficiaries, do access these funds and do get this capacity building that they need to get. So we then show, and it's really just a few, and we actually selected those some of the bigger ones that we are busy with our other stakeholders, the two that we know that we would be here with. But we are doing much more than this. With many other institutions, either directly with the two stakeholders or working together with them at funding and supporting other institutions to ensure that we are able to. We've always met. We've had some key meetings around this program with the local labor forums, which is run by the bargaining council. So I always love when we sit together around the table and we. We engage nicely on support and training of our people. Then I go out of those meetings, Mr. Nolchu, and I hear in the media that they are now fighting, and I say that when we were together, it was all good. The question as we move forward, as I said, we really are now preparing to for the organization to come out of administration. Our new CEO is here with us today. We'll henceforth lead the organization. We also asked to speak to the processes of the board. We do have a meeting with our principals next week, perhaps to put some concrete timelines around that, but those processes are quite advanced. We have received all the nominations. Our colleagues from COCTA will have to make sure, but we have received all the nominations for the board. We are busy processing them, and we will very shortly submit them to the department. So anytime now, the board of the organization can be put in place. I already spoke about the current for the financial year 15-16, which we are busy with. We have already received and have already started processing applications so that projects can start. And we await others from municipalities at the end of May. And we really hope that we'll all work together to ensure that where there are slight challenges, that we're able to support municipalities and get them to do what they need to do so that we are able to continue providing the kind of support that we've spoken about. I think I spoke about the licensing of the CETA earlier on. And Chairperson, thank you very much. As we said, we will then interact and answer any questions. Thank you.
Very much. I guess colleagues have done the same. I've allowed the presenter to really provide all the details. All time is important, but avoided the situation where there may be a feeling that you are not giving enough time. So we will encourage the last speaker to do the same. Where we will save time, please take the initiative and do so yourself. Not been guided by the chair. As all of us, I speak to have compiled some notes, isolated issues that on which we want to ask questions, and those points that we want to make as part of the actual discussion and the contribution. Okay. The last presentation is going to be from Saga.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable members of Portfolio Committee, our partners and stakeholders, COGTA Department of Higher Education and Training, and also LGC. Chair, we are all presented and going to debate on the matter of invitation. But if the committee feels that we didn't cover, we are prepared to be called again and cover, but towards the end of our presentation, we'll be able to give you a roadmap of what we are covering in terms of capacity building. But that will be covered by the presenter. I would request the executive director, Riona, to do the presentation to the Honorable Committee Chairperson.
Okay, thank you very much, Chairperson, as well as good morning. Hope it's still morning to the members of the committee. Once more, we wish to convey our sincere thanks for being given the opportunity to share some thoughts on the work that we do to this committee, which is obviously, again, of important oversight responsibility over our sector. I think as the member of the LEC has indicated, our presentation is very brief, for the simple reason that the committee is very clear what are the expectations, parameters of our presentation today. And we've respected the wish of the committee and have not expanded our presentation beyond what is asked of us to do. And our focus will be pertinently on how our newly established and launched Center for Leadership and Governance is going to be conducting its work, obviously working together with other important formations within our sector, faced with the collective responsibility alongside us in meeting our capacity building objectives as well as challenges. Just by way of opening the input, Chairperson, drawing from the recent audit release of the municipal audit outcome, you would have seen just by the mere statement of the Auditor General, the importance that has been placed on the kind of work that we are doing in conjunction with the department in the form of the Back to Basics program, and how the efforts that we've already undertaken are beginning to yield some improvements in the audit outcomes as has been recently presented. And it's important to underscore that point, given the fact that the work of the center is very much located within the context of that government program, which has received, I should also comment on that, the overwhelming approval and acceptance of the membership that we service, which are municipalities across the country. And I think it's important to also reinforce, Chairperson, the importance that while we may have a broad capacity building role on behalf of our members, we have in the recent past and based on resolutions that have been made to our elective conferences, we have taken the view that we will be better placed in terms of our investment in capacity building if we concentrate our efforts more on ensuring that there is, in fact, leadership effectiveness at the level of our leaders in municipalities who are still with the responsibility of exercising, you know, political management and leadership over the running of our municipalities, as well as an important echelon of our leadership, which is obviously senior management. So while we accept that our role for the capacity building is a broad one, but I think we are facing some special significance on responding to our leadership challenges, as well as turning around a level of performance. As you would have seen from Hopta's presentation earlier, we are all working together towards responding to our capacity building needs at various levels, and not just focusing on individual skills development efforts as well as capacity building, but also looking at enabling mechanisms both from an institutional level as well as the environment, obviously, or policy making, etc. If I may just focus my attention on the science itself, I think it's important that we lay down the context for why this particular initiative is in place. It is in place based on a context that has to do with what Salga's role and mandate is, which you would have seen set out also in the presentation by COGSA. I will not repeat what has been said, but I think more specifically, it departs from the fact that we have an important responsibility of developing capacity with new colleges, and more particularly leadership development, which you would know in the make would cover counselors who are elected officials, obviously, in France. And it's a space that Salga has traditionally occupied since its establishment, perhaps more in terms of program delivery and planning in comparison with other stakeholders that collaborate with us. And more specifically, from the point of view of enabling legislation, we have a myriad of responsibilities to fulfill, which also relate to constantly looking at mechanisms and solutions for resolving problems that our sector faces, obviously from a membership or member-centric point of view, perhaps as opposed to the mandate that COGSA fulfills, which is perhaps more regulatory and perhaps different with CETA, which is perhaps more from a skills development point of view. And always, even though we find one another in that space, there are those instances where there's differentiation in the nuances of our focus and our program. So in appreciating the challenges that face local government and with the intention of enhancing cooperation and sharing between municipalities and finding solutions to problems that face our sector, we have then established, by virtue of the mandate given to Salga by its members, what we call the Center for Leadership and Government. And what is the center meant to achieve? It's meant, first and foremost, to drive a development agenda, and in doing so, as an institution of learning, meant to obviously focus on active reflection and thought leadership program, leaving the space, chairperson, to universities and like-minded organizations to focus in the domain perhaps of qualification and those unrelated programs. So we want to play, and we are playing in the space of thought leadership, targeted mainly at what we call the leadership excellence in municipalities. Part of that responsibility, and in line with our mandate of contributing to developing development in the rest of our continent, in line with Leopard and Green objectives, we have an outlook that looks at outside the country, health associations, neighboring countries, more particularly the southern regions, develop in terms of their local government system. It's a responsibility that we undertake, obviously, in partnership with the Department of International Relations and Cooperation through obviously a defined program of engagement targeted for that purpose. And obviously we see the center also firmly located in our efforts towards professionalizing local government with all the pillars that inform that professionalization, from building the leadership capability, institutional professionalism, looking at service orientation, etc., etc. So it's part of our program orientation, have a particular focus on those areas. Our target audience is what we call the leaders of leaders, which are elected local government officials who are mainly fulfilling a variety of the functions, the mayor to be specific, sections of the certain managers and their direct reports, and we intend over time to expand the scope of our coverage to include the layer of management within municipalities which is not part of an echelon, to special purpose programs that are looking at how do we ensure that not only is the current leadership pipeline attended to, but the future needs from a leadership point of view of local government, by focusing on data of emerging leaders. Part of the criticism that we've seen in the performance of local government is that we don't often retain our good managers, and the same normally applies to our political leaders. And that in itself contributes to an environment where in between a particular term of our municipal councils as well as at the beginning of every term, we are forever focusing ourselves on training new councillors and leaders with a view that they have an understanding of our system when we should be in the main building already on the benefits that we have achieved over time. So that's one of the things that we are hoping to do to contribute to expanding that leadership pipeline, which we feel is an integral component of making our sector function more effectively. Obviously, the center is not an island on its own. Chairperson, it conceptualized the setup in such a way that it delivers on its objectives through partnership-based arrangements. And we've created an environment before launching the center in March as our National Members Assembly, where we've consulted extensively with government partners, not only with the government, but also tertiary institutions who we feel are appropriately located to bring to the fore a capacity building program, which are nuanced and in our view respond adequately to the needs of leadership development. Chairperson, from what we've seen, where we've generated a lot of programs which are not having the kind of impact and the effectiveness that we're looking for. So the model is in itself tailored in such a way that it embraces partnership in its foundation and its offering, and we feel that it also in its positioning as well as approach contributes to the department's effort towards best basics in regard to the fact that one of the pillars of best basics is obviously the improvement of governance and looking at effective leadership towards obviously resilient institutions at the local level. In terms of how it's structured to deliver, I did talk about active selection and thought leadership. We also are very mindful of the importance of leaders, learning from leaders, as opposed to perhaps relying on academic exposure programs in terms of improving their effectiveness. So part of the approach is that where we have intelligence about elected leaders who have done good work within our context as well as elsewhere, we intend to draw on the skills to be able to place that experience at the disposal of those leaders who would obviously benefit from that exposure and learning. And we are locating the work of the institution as a learning organization in the sense that while we accept that leaders have particular responsibilities that are set up in legislation, I think it's important that from time to time they are engaged with the changing dynamics of the environment that confronts them, given the complexity of their roles and the system within which they have operated, so that they benefit from systematic problem solving, best practices, experimentation, new approaches, as well as learning from the experiences of others and best practices out there. So that we are able to transfer knowledge as quickly as possible to leaders within the sector. And because there's a very strong and very clearly set up regulatory environment around national qualification framework, we have located the work of the CETA outside of that framework, adhering a recognition of the importance of the formal educational qualification environment. Can you help me there with charge? So we are framing leadership development as a large-scale local government change and transformation journey. We are institutionalizing and integrating strategic leadership talent management process. We are formulating a future-fit leadership stance where we model the kind of behavior that we want our leaders to embrace and embody as part of the fulfillment of their roles, ensuring that those learnings are appropriate and suited to our local government needs. We want to craft a context-relevant competence model, and it's one of the first things we have to fulfill in our order of business now that we've established the center.
we are adopting an action learning and creative philosophy. One of the things that we want to do, Jefferson, is that we want to run seminars around the country on topical and thematic issues. The issue might be doubtless and audit, might be managing climate change challenges, it might be water demand management, and we bring to the fore of our local leaders, people who are experts in that area, who could help those leaders connect with those challenges and be able to transform organizations for them. So we're also looking at building a high impact leadership delivery architecture, as well as using a set of blended and learning interventions. So where we're located, Chairperson, we feel we don't necessarily need the physical infrastructure from which to operate. We feel we've got the ability and the nimbleness and the agility to be able to deliver learning to different mediums. People can meet them face to face. We can obviously deliver online learning programs, as well as ensuring that they are communities that are created between us. So if you are a mayor, and I'll make an example of one of the political principles that is here, if you're a mayor, like Shanzangela, who is a mayor of Surunzi, but is also a member of Southern Government Council, the mayor can be connected with a mayor from elsewhere using methodologies from which they can benefit from learning from one another in a manner that's obviously iterative in its delivery. We want to construct an efficient and effective learning and organizational design delivery that in itself, even though it is made up of leadership that is able to deliver value and services under the layer of
okay, the promise.
As well as conducting ongoing assessment efforts to ensure that we realize the benefits. Obviously, in terms of the delivery model, there's a learning component of the center, there's a reflection component, there's a sharing, as well as a layer where we locate value-added services that are related to our responsibilities to our governance and leaders, some of which depart from the provisions of the regulation, which at the later stage in this session, the committee was receiving the proposition on. After a bit of a claim attempted in terms of the program portfolio, some of which is on the go, some of which is yet to get off the ground in terms of the actual delivery. I will not spend time in carrying that detail. The apex that we have made available and prepared to our parliamentary official that can be made available to the committee so that at their own time they can have the benefit of understanding the details behind the program. And even this booklet, which I have in my hand, it's not the objective of the president, does set up the program portfolio in much more fuller detail than the presentation provided. Some of our partners from an information point of view, some of which are universities, international institutions, professional bodies, as well as most importantly the School of Government, which we are starting a partnership around looking at specific delivery objectives, more at the middle to senior management level and quality. In terms of the funding model, which brings into the equation obviously the role of the sector, we see a very important role in the sector propelling the success of the center in terms of providing the required funding instruments for delivery. As we speak, we have put together some proposals which are in line with the indication that have been issued by the CIT around discretionary grant funding, a process which, as you had heard from the administrator, is receiving attention on the understanding that in the not distant future we'll be able to conclude that. But some of the more specific programs that obtained for that kind of initiative. I think, Chairperson, this slide, I know you didn't receive it when you got a copy in the presentation. Chairperson, my apologies. It just sets out how we find the capacity portfolio trade, where our capacity program is located, and we have integrated the best that we can, even those programs that are delivered at the municipal level to learning institutions, so that we are not confining the agenda of capacity building to what is only a delivery pipeline of SALGA, but to the sector as a whole. Obviously, we are, as I indicated, not only from the SALGA point of view, but from the center itself, we advocate a collaborative approach to our work. premise and certain principles as you see in there, Chelsea, of the engagement, and where we principally see the affirmation of our work in terms of collaboration. We have existing structures that have been set out in previous presentations. You see, we are very much of the local government steering committee that put together both players, which speak from time to time, the capacity building committee that is now very expensive, and we are beginning to make inroads in working together with an important structure of our country, with groups at the country's resource development needs through the technical working group and the council that is filled with that responsibility. We are starting work around establishing governance and peer review structures under the auspices of the center, which will involve the participation of CETA as well as COGTA as well as the National Solar Council. So we look at coordination at various levels, sharing of content material, obviously working together on some of our communication platforms, and obviously we are looking at instruments that are going to define that relationship. So MOUs, we are in discussion with CETA. While formal MOU, I'm also in parallel discussions with COGTA as well as other stakeholders on firming up those relationships, so that as was indicated earlier, we work much more collectively as partners in delivery of our program. One of the programs that is the best case of that partnership is a program that focuses on test cases. We have initiated the program of delivery, and as we implement it in partnership with COGTA as well as CETA, and it is very much part of the broad principles for implementing that program that we are equal partners in such delivery. There are obviously other opportunities, Chairman, depending on the changing landscape. As you see, the future is still under administration. You might see in the not too distant future the board being established, the whole of other opportunities for engagement, which look in the environment of further research, quality assurance of some of the products that we are beginning to create as our portfolio of offering is increasing by day, as well as...
They've been going on there for a long, long time, and I kept quiet because I thought the senior matures would know when to stop.
Thanks. Okay. Just to sum up, President, while we accept that there's more that needs to be done in our collaborative effort, I think much more than ever before, I think we are on a very solid foundation for improving some of the work that we do on a collaborative level. And I think we'll be happy to hear the views of the committee in helping us shape the agenda as we obviously approach the head of our Temo Municipal Council, bearing in mind that there are a lot of obligations that we need to fulfill to the committee itself to try and make community aware what we've been doing over the course of the term in trying to build the capacity of our leaders, more particularly of the political leaders and senior managers, as well as preparing them for the outlook that is ahead of us as we approach the next term of local government, which, as it would appear, would be something that we have to be ready with in some way in the middle of 2016 or
for that out. That is in closing. Now, for the point where we should engage in these presentations. But because there's a danger that if I say questions and so on and comments, we shall go all over the show. It may be a very good idea, subject to closing approval. Maybe a good idea to start with a question of your questions per presentation, and then we'll open up for discussion. If you are ready, we can start with a COGTA presentation to find out if there are any questions. Any specific questions? The questions, there's Milan, there's Mteto, mm-hmm.
Sengwa, and then Mudawu, and that's all that.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, just a couple of rather specific questions. I'm looking at the COGTA presentation, and on slide 5, it talks about the macro context of capacity building local government. And the DG spoke to Section 154 of the Constitution passing both national and provincial government in supporting and strengthening this capacity. Now, that talks to almost an interventionary approach in assisting local municipalities. It talks to providing people on the ground in municipalities to assist. And I'd like to know if any analysis has been done with regard to the efficacy of those interventions, how many such interventions have been undertaken, and generally speaking, what the outcomes were. Then, Chairperson, one of my concerns revolves around MISA, because this is obviously an interventionary or capacity assisting agency, an agency that's designed to help municipalities implement their municipal infrastructure, spend their to provide expertise and assistance in implementing municipal infrastructure grants and other capital projects. But I have a concern here, and that is the PSMA, MSMA skills within NISA. I'm going to give you an example. If we look at the toilet saga that's been going on in the Northern Cape and Eastern Cape around the Sienza Group, where a project was awarded where the consortium does not have the necessary CIEB rating to do that job. ESA then recommended that group, and the project in Northern Cape was somewhere in the region of 140 million rand. ESA then recommended that group to implement a similar project in the Eastern Cape in Amapola District Municipality for 631 million rand under Section 32 of the MSMA Supply Chain Regulations. Now, the scope of the projects are completely different, and that need is unacceptable. So I'd really like to know what supply chain management, PFMA, MFMA, and financial management expertise resides within NISA in order for it to make such recommendations and to award such tenders in the first place. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Thank you very much. The next person is...
I understand, Chair, the issue of the training of those that are already been appointed. But I just want to get a clarity as to what is the next plan that they have other than for those that already are in the system. Besides that, they will not be trained altogether. What do you have in mind? What plan to capacitate those people that are there? Are you going to fire them? Are you going to... What are you exactly going to do with them? Because you said you are no longer continuing with the training them on the basic skills. That's true.
Sure, the point is noted.
No, thank you very much, Chair. Generally, mine is firstly a broad question, Chair. The issue of coordination, just across the board from all the presentations that you've received, because I do get a sense that in certain instances they're speaking past each other, and that is a concern. I mean, I know you said much about COGTA, but just to illustrate a point I'm trying to make, Chair, the future is the request are in 1 point something billion rand, and they only have just under 4 million rand to fund projects. Now, in this way, they were speaking to one another, probably in a more logical sense. Funds could be put together to make sure that there's no duplication. But just generally, I'm just quite concerned about the issue of coordination, and I think that's a matter that they need to look at collectively and arrive at a logical working conclusion. That's just a broad statement that I wanted to make, Chair. Chair, I heard the DG speaking about the issues of persons who were initially employed, what Honorable Mthethwa has spoken about, who didn't qualify or did not have maybe the bare minimum requisite skills for a particular position. And whilst the corrective action, of course, is to train those persons, and maybe that might be noble, but I'm looking at the opportunity cost and the financial implications in us correcting a wrong which should not have taken place in the, should not have taken place in the first instance. Why are people who are not qualified being employed to begin with? Because then that robs us of monies which could be channeled to persons who are being upskilled, who initially qualified, and as time evolved and so on, they needed to be upskilled. But quite frankly, to be employing people who don't qualify is one, a waste of taxpayers' money in the sense that they're receiving salaries and other benefits. On top of that, you now have to skill them. So if we could then to do justice to the capacity building and creative institutions that the DG spoke about, would be then to say we need to tighten on the recruitment process to make sure that people that are being employed are employed. An example is Gopal Chair. We had the DG having to issue 9 warnings to her DBGs simply because they just didn't understand PFMA and they did all sorts of other crazy things. Just basic things. So let us arrive at a point where people are being recruited and the money that's there available for capacity building is money which will be spent on people who actually should not, if you shouldn't be there in the first place.
Okay. I guess what I'm saying is that the question is also directed to LGC, as much as it is directed to court. So please note those questions also relate to you. So that when it comes to your turn, you also respond to some of these issues. The next question is Dao.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question is related to the question that asked by MP Mthethwa and William. Just like a follow-up question, I will ask in this way, Chairperson, that some of managers and directors are taken to different institutions to get that qualification that they needed in the department. But I don't know how the department or SALGA are monitoring those managers, but some of them don't finish their courses. So they just go to university and they don't finish that courses. That's my first question. And the second question is to the Hokta. How Hokta is solving the problem of non-relevant qualification to senior managers? You find that in some institutions, they're deploying people who have a diploma in education as the technical directors or the managers. I just want to know how that would solve this problem, because this is happening in most of municipalities. The candidates are appointing qualified people nowadays, and happening. If you can check on that, what you can write.
Okay, the question applies to everybody.
And then the last question myself, Chairperson Zadie, to me, according to the minister, there's a scarce qualification like a technical director. Most of municipalities are appointing unqualified technical directors, and that's the problem of city developers. Thank you, Chair.
And that, the last one.
Yes, on this key issue of recruitment, the issue of offering services, I think that offering services besides
telecoms. We also want to speak.
Yeah, not actually.
I know.
The issue of recruitment in municipalities is a very serious issue, because the corporate services are the things that is just got overarching responsibility across all the local government departments. I do think that the certain should be employed as a director, that should actually have a legal background, because it is supposed to be the sort of expertise, knowledge to the other departments in the ministry.
Yeah.
Chair. My worry is, according to my experience in local government, the capacity year in, year out. And is this capacity building sustainable? No. Current situation of aid employment also is a problem from the side of the Green Party. It's true. Aid development, aid employment. With this regard policy and regulations on appointment of suitable managers. Then the issue of administration vis-à-vis political interference. I think it's also the cause of us in local government losing skilled people to private sector. Because there is a lot of political interference in administration. That is why we can't even sustain this capacity building. So it's a waste of money, waste of resources, and waste of capable people to take municipalities forward. The issue of continuity also. 5 years in, 5 years out. More especially from the political leadership. We will end up being a training institution whereby we don't have that continuity in terms of leadership. So maybe LGC or SALGA come with a methodology to influence those powers. Say, let us, this amount of, this percentage of people must be retained so that we don't end up training every time. I'll be trained through UJ, I've been trained through VET, but those skills, where are we going to implement it? So I'm raising this because we as lawmakers, as politicians, we must help these functionaries to do their work. They must also advise us on how can we improve and hold on these people who are skilled in local government. But as of now, every time you hear local government is really lack of skills, lack of capacity in local government, but there's a lot of things going on at that level. Thank you.
Yeah. I'm worried that the method of the chosen may fall apart if people are not careful, because we end up just going on and on and on about your questions and so on. I was going to say, let's please switch our cell phone off. I had my cell phone on. Yeah, which was a bit of a problem. So I apologize for that. But let's do that. Secondly, there's some food at the back here. Tea and so on. So we are encouraged to stand up and walk this way. And those make sure that you don't come in any 7. 3, I'm sure, is the minimum. So we can check. And the 2 people who can come in. So please do that. Because there's not going to be a break. So try and save time. Perhaps. So try and save time. Now, I see the 2 hands. I was really making a feel that can we just do this round and then move on to questions about the others. Remember, some of the questions apply to all the stakeholders. So I'm asking them to note the questions. So when it's their turn to speak,
I also try to cover those kind of issues. And if you go to, if you agree, to local government center, questions to respect to local government center, your question has been asked, you just hint at it. And that is from the picture. Yes, we have Tengwa, and then Tetua, who else is there now? And Mila. In that order.
Thanks. Just a brief question, because tomorrow I'm going to be at COP as well with the team, so I don't want to resort myself there. But yeah, I'm just worried. Although there is progress with regards to people with disabilities, but quite frankly, it seems as if more attention needs to be paid to that sector. If you're looking at, you know, the age analysis of prior years, there's been 0-0-0. I think it's only in the last year where there has been an improvement, and there was an issue, some of the funding being inactive. We would want to really know what the plan to get the focused attention on the sector of persons with disabilities, because there does seem to be a lag behind. My second one, Chair, was on the slide. It's not numbered, so I'll be forgiven, Chair. But generally, the question was, hey, speak about youth. You are doing all the slides.
Just mention the issue, yeah. Remember this slide.
Well, we're making an impact towards addressing guest skills in the sector, that particular batch of slides towards the end. I'm sure that information would be available now, but I would just want to find out if those youth brackets there could be broken down further, because if you look at blackmail, it clusters everybody, and that would include, of course, youth. So it's better focus on the scope on the youth, the breakdown in terms of who is that youth, how is that youth there. Constituted, Chair, because it, as it stands, it gives a global picture, but that's the situation. We're not asking for that now, but it will be provided.
Thanks, Chair. Let me check, Chair, with the estimated budget here of 1.6 billion. Do the sector believe that this is realistic, this type of budget? If yes, how are you dealing with it? Because you are only operating on a budget of less than 400 million. The second one, Chair, is the issue of the capacity building issue. Of coordinating capacity building on local government. If you can explain to me, I can see there are program that has been planned, and others has been activated, and others are not inactive, but there is spending, or even on those that we have not been active. Can you explain what is happening there as well? And then lastly, Chair, in the maybe let me also comment on some of the things that's been said. All of us here, Chair, have been deployed by certain organizations. This issue of deployment being raised as it is for the ruling party, it must come to a point where we discuss it in a right forum. But nobody sitting here is not being deployed. I wonder the member from the EFF if it's not being deployed here. This issue of cadership deployment.
No, Chair.
We will deal with this as it comes, Chair.
Chair, I was saying in terms of administration, where we should deploy capable people with high qualifications. Don't take politicians.
Yeah.
I'm referring to administration. I think my argument is...
Let's try to be very ordered. I know that you may
is really hot under the corner. And one to respond almost immediately to the issue. But the, all of us have to do it. I mean, the meeting will fall apart. So I'm urging for a more calmer, more rational approach. Not that members are not calmer, they're not rational. But please note as well that we want to set the time apart for the discussion. Which that we should be convinced to spend most of our time. But we are following this because we really want to ensure that members are not lost of an opportunity to get clarity on some of the issues. Okay. Can we move on to Mudau?
Thank you, Chair.
And then Miller.
Salga. Put the out to Salga. Nekaso wetara wa montara yang di maspal se di sena di capacity building ya makansala because ukra maspal o kono se ta teme ya wana yo tsho na kansala ro leng training mara chele te iso ba le tsena le ko emi and then chairperson, it's not wrong to do break either if you qualify then a good expense on the what he's doing.
So the comments are spilling over, you can see now. Instead of cross-community, this is our moving up, Salga.
I'm not responding, Chen. I'm just saying, it's a comment, it's good to the department to deploy a cadre who has experience and qualified qualifications.
Okay.
Chairperson, all South Africans are cadre. A cater is a leader.
I'm not done.
I don't know if this is Salga or to Kota, but I just issue of equity employment is a problem in some of the universities. I think the department must improve on that. And all other issues, the wage gap in from foreign municipalities. That is why in rural municipalities, if there's a qualified or experienced people, because people are moving to other strategic municipalities because the resources that they're taking from. And that means that it's not for everybody for that picture. Thank you for that.
Miller, the last one.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chair, I note LGC's concerns about underfunding and that they said that, I think they said the primary source funding was discretionary grant funding. My question is, what happened to the skills development levy? Does that not form part of the funding model anymore? Don't they get funded directly from the municipalities as a result of the SDL? Then, Chair, I have a concern that we're holding up LGCETA as the organization that needs to train our municipal officials, particularly on the skills of the senior management, the MFMA, the supply chain management, etc., etc. And yet, this is an organization that A, doesn't have a board, B, is under administration, and C, has gone from a disgrace to a qualified audit. Now, to me, that is a major concern, and we have to ask whether or not LGC is the correct body that should be training our municipal officials, given the their own financial shortcomings, their own management shortcomings, their own governance shortcomings. I understand that there has been a turnaround, but my question is, where is the leadership in LGC to come from if they don't have a board?
Okay, thank you very much. Can we have a few responses on that before
they respond?
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks, Chair.
I also want to ask a question. It might probably be responded to by Falkta, but I'm sure Salga and LGC can also respond to that. When are we going to have one coordinated training interventions in the county on local government? You've got LGC that is also tasked to conduct training and capacity building, as well as establish a center of leadership and governance. And there might also be other bodies that are conducting training in local governments. Now my question is, when are we going to have one coordinated training intervention like we have at national government for the school of government that conducts training across the board? You don't have training interventions conducted by different entities. So that would be my question, Chair. Secondly, I know that in terms of the Skills Development Act, there is a certain amount of operational expenditure that has to be put aside for training in local government. And I suppose that amount goes to LGCTA. You will correct me if I'm wrong. Now, to what extent does municipalities derive value out of that amount that gets set aside? Which amount must then be paid over so that municipalities can get training? Thanks.
Shepherdson, you will also know that you invited us here to make a second presentation on the progress with the implementation of the regulations. A number of these questions asked is answered through that presentation. And I would like for you to, within the time available, give us a short opportunity to make that presentation there where many of these specific questions will be answered around qualifications and what are we doing. Some of the other questions, I will first ask my colleague Victor Matada from our MISA team. You can stand here as well, sit, and just answer the specific question. Also to say that the question that Honourable Member Malam asked was also the subject of a parliamentary question that the Minister already answered. So we will just repeat the focus that we've taken in that parliamentary question here as well, that Victor will be speaking to. There's one or two other questions that we will pick up on, but the bulk of the questions specific, we would like to pause for the presentation, and if anything remains all unattended to, we will then attend to respond to that. So, Victor, if you could just quickly respond.
Yeah, thanks, as Honourable Members. Just on the specific question relating to the appointment of the younger group, as Ms. Majid has indicated, indeed, we have several parliamentary questions provided information to some of the specific questions raised. The first one that the Honourable Member raised regarding the accreditation by CRDP, what we can say is that the ESLA group itself has tendered for a job as a joint venture, which was made up of a number of companies. So the reason why they won the tender was on the basis of the accreditation to one of the member companies there. By the CIDB.
The accreditation that I referred to, the only company in that consortium that has accreditation is the Tosh Group. And they have a CIDB rating of 5, which means that they can tender up to 6.5 million rand. Now, the tender in the Northern Cape was 114 million rand. So there's a problem there.
Can I ask members to please allow for responses to be given
Let's make the comments when we get into the
debate. Yeah, indeed it's true that the accreditation is on level 5. I'm not really familiar with the technology in terms of the limit and so on. But it might also be necessary to indicate here that the whole tender, as it's the appointment of the examiner by the different municipalities, that tender on its own is under investigation. And our minister is informed about those processes and the fact that once the investigation is completed, the minister will also be briefed about that from there. But also it's necessary to say, lastly, that in terms of the provisions of the law regarding the sharing of the contract between two or more agencies, our understanding and the advice that we got from our legal division is that it was not incumbent upon NISA to make those recommendations. The district municipal approach in NISA to get information about the tender that the contract that we had in the tender. And all we did was provide the necessary information regarding how that appointment came about. So once we had that information, the
ring was another temptation is very great to try to speak to Member Miller as if we're involved in a conversation and so on. That is what we're trying to do to avoid. Please don't do that. Speak through the chairperson and Member Miller will hear you. But the answers are not just meant for Miller, they are meant for everybody.
Chair, thanks for that assistance. We would want to say on this particular question to the committee, one, MISA did not make any recommendation. It provided information. The decision-making authority is the district municipality. However, Chair, I would like to offer to the committee, if this is a matter of a follow-up parliamentary question, please deal with it appropriately in that space. The question was, what supply chain management, financial management expertise reside within MISA to award such tenders? MISA do not award these tenders, right? It partners with different municipalities. So if there's any specific follow-up question, please raise it in the appropriate forum, but I don't think it's fundamentally related to the topic that we are dealing with here today. If we could then move on to the other questions that the committee have asked. Much of it, as I said, will be answered through the presentation. The question about when will we get to a coordinated approach to training interventions, so that is exactly what we're wrestling with here now, to say there's room for all the players on the field, but the players need to exercise greater awareness, discipline, teaching how to play better together for the, you know, to score the goals that we need most. And therein lies the challenge for us to get to, you know, a coordinated approach. We are saying through this presentation to the committee that, you know, we are saying that COGPA needs to play a leading role in providing the coordinating space together with all the sector departments, with all the key players. COGPA, together with Department of Higher Education, have also developed an initiative for a local government institute or school of local government or a center of learning for local government, that our two respective ministers will be issuing a particular architecture for making that happen very soon, right? And talks are happening behind in terms of at both a political and a technical level to take that piece of work forward. That's quite at an advanced stage. So from a national architecture point of view, there is the intention, in close collaboration with the National School of Government, is to look at a special focus that we need to bring for a local government school of sorts, so that we can create a funnel and, you know, have some proper gatekeeping so that we weed out the fly-by-night training. Everyone wants to apply for money to the CETA for a range of different trainings, and it's not the quality or the specific focus of training that we need. And this institute, we do not envisage it as an institute or a learning center or a school of government that's going to apply you know, whatever to whomever. We say, what are the priorities that we want to focus on? Who are the best providers to bring that to bear? And how are we going to quality control? And if you like, set the norm for what is the kind and caliber of training required in local government. So that is the intention of where we're shifting to. So that time has come, sir. It is very much in this current moment that we're speaking about. Yeah, I'd like to pause unless you call my attention to anything that I might have missed, but the others we will answer in the presentation. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Chair. I'll take the questions directed to the LGC. I'll start with the ones that were raised, that were directed to all of us. And to the best of my knowledge, the first one was about from the member. I must apologize, Chair. I may not always have all the names of the members correct. Mm-hmm. Apologies for that. But the first question was about the 1.6 billion, which I think the member called the budget versus the less than 400 million. Well, I'm not sure. Okay, I hope I understood the question correctly, but I think the member misunderstood what I said. The 1.6 billion figure is the worth of application received. So I was saying, against the budget that we have as a CETA, of less than 400 million rand discretionary grant budget, but when we issue an invitation for entities to apply, municipalities and all others, what we receive back, which speaks to the need out there, is that big figure of 1.6. It's not what we have internally, it's not what we are planning on spending or working with, but it is the worth of the application that we receive. Then I would very quickly like to take 2 minutes to explain the funding agreement of the CETAs, by way of responding to the question that said what happened to the discretionary grants. Through SARS, the Department of Higher Education and Training collects levies from all entities, all employers who employ 50 people and more, and that 100% of those levies that are collected through SARS by the department, 20% of that goes to the National Field Fund, which is the entity of the Department of Education and Training, that then the fund uses, administers to also fund certain projects of training within the local government sector. 80% of that comes to each CETA. Now, within that, each CETA of that 8% is allowed to use 10% for itself. And I'm hoping that I'm also touching on the other question, which was not very clear to me, to say that there is a certain percentage that is set aside for municipalities and all of that. Of the funding that a CETA receives, 10% of it, the CETA is allowed to use to run itself, your normal salaries, buildings, everything. 20% of that goes back to municipalities as mandatory funds. If members recall, when I spoke to the issue of workplace skills plans and compliance, when all of that is in place, it then triggers payment back to each municipality of 20% of the levy. So that's mandatory grants. So what is then left for the CETA to spend at its own discretion, which is what constitutes the discretionary grant? Okay, the 10% that we spend on ourselves, then we have a little 0.5% that we transfer back to the department for the operationalization of the Quality Council for Trade and Occupation, the QCTO. So we are then left with 49.5% that we then spend as discretionary grants. So when we talk about discretionary grants, we are talking about that component of the funding of the CETA, which amounts to that 49.5%, which now is what the CETA uses at its discretion. So all the applications that we receive there, we then evaluate and we look at the SFE and the critical skills plan as the budget that we use to then fund now, you know, at the discretion of the CETA. So I hope I've covered the questions that have to do with how we are funded and how we spend the money. Then the other question that again was to all of us, which I wish to comment on, was how is SALGA and COSA, we were not mentioning this, but because in Revila I am going to speak to it, monitoring the training of people and ensuring that they complete and all of that. It's a matter that is a problem for all seekers, I want to believe. The very nature of the training, most of the training that teachers provide, that we provide, require people to either spend a bit of time in class as well as a workplace or whatever form or another, or just theoretically in class. Now, the type of people that we are talking about, especially employed officials as well, senior people counselors, and by the way, for the local government, including traditional leaders, not only is it a challenge to get such people to go on those training programs because of responsibilities and all of that, it also becomes a challenge for them to stay in those programs, such that it's not inconceivable. I mean, at the moment, we are dealing with one concrete example where the funding was for, although in this specific case it was for unemployed young people, but was for 100 learners who started the program, but at the end of it, now that we have to release the last batch payment, only 32 learners have completed the program. And it's a matter that that we continue to grapple with, and it's a matter that gets better the more we work with. And I'm sure Father may also want to comment, because again, we are running a big project with them, as reflected in the presentation, in their case now, training counselors. It's a matter that works better when we are coordinated, when we work together. The system has got its own mechanisms of monitoring the training through the visits that I spoke about, through the visits by both provincial office staff to monitor that people are in class, people are learning, but also at the end through the visit by ETQA function to go into verification of the learner achievements of the portfolios of evidence that we have put in. So we do have mechanisms, but more often than not, they do not entirely address the problem of, in particular, senior people. The big project, we recently tried to initiate a project with a training of traditional leaders. It has not yet begun, notwithstanding that it has been approved for a long time. Because you always have those challenges of getting all the documents, the training provider or the project management people getting to the areas where the project is or where the beneficiaries are, the trainees are. So you have a combination of issues that you need to deal with. But yes, it works better when we work with, in particular with SALGA in the case of counselors. We are always training people year in, year out. It is true. And I think from my perspective at the moment, all I can really say is that I think it's a matter that all the stakeholders need to grapple with together. The immediate response at the moment is that through information that the CETA has or who has been trained in what that our management information systems have, that should form the basis of such discussions. The suggestion by the member, of course, was that we as the CETA and other partners should then come up with strategies to influence. It was not said overtly, I guess. It meant to influence the political parties because the issue was about retention of, especially at the political level. We can debate that. We can share information. We can advocate. But I suspect that political parties would then do what they need to do. We fully agree, back to the member, about the issue of people with disabilities. It's one matter that when we came into the CETA, we highlighted as being a very serious weakness currently, or as shown in the previous years. We have started and we have initiated at least one big, and we are looking at other now. With the current allocation, we are looking at more. But last year, we have initiated one big-ish project that targets people with disabilities. Again, for various reasons, from the report that we're getting, mainly the fact that once you started a project with people with disabilities, you then have to ensure that, in particular, the workplaces where they will spend time at are then ready for them to cater for all manner of different disabilities that they have with, and that usually takes time. The issue of recruiting them, as well as we ensure that the workplaces are ready for them, usually takes time. This one project that I'm talking about has now eventually started. Initially, we had intended it to cater for 100 learners, 100 people with disabilities. It has now started with 60, partly because they were unable to get enough workplaces that were ready to receive them within that. But we continue to then work. And we work mainly with organizations of people with disabilities. We assess member and will certainly provide information about the breakdown on the youth numbers that we have in the slide. Okay, I think I've spoken to the issue of whether the 1.6 is realistic and what it actually is. Then there was a question about spending on inactive projects. The CETA has a specific, it now under discussion, but I'll speak to what has been, model of paying for projects, and it's based on touches. When a project is approved and when all the compliance has been met in terms of documentation and other things in a funding agreement signed, then a particular amount gets paid. It's a normal way of how most CETAs work, to varying degrees and to different amounts and percentages, but most CETAs work that way. It's intended to ensure that, in particular, also as a way of supporting all different types of training providers, that projects are able to begin. So when compliance has been met, you then get to pay out the first half payment because you've recruited the learners, all the things are there, you ensure that the learners are in place, then you pay the first half payment. And then second half payment after a certain percentage of the completion of the work of the project with supporting documentation and all that. So yes, typically, and the numbers, I apologize, it's a different number, but it's a point that we explained in this committee when we first came to CISA to say that that's part of a, and we call it inherent risk with how the CISA funds this project. It's necessary, but it also comes with a certain risk, because what you then tend to get is that you spend some money, albeit, yes, you ensure that compliance is there, but right at the start of the training project as opposed to as to when a significant part of the training has happened. And of course, in the past, it has meant that some people receive that amount and then, you know, there's no incentive to proceed with the training. But one, that is how the system generally tends to work. But number two, with us then, in trying to ensure that we care that we run away from that, I didn't spend time discussing it, but it's one of the issues that are on the slides where we talk about the new system that we've introduced, the slide that has the two blocks. One of the things that we are now considering doing, although we are still not sure that as an organization we are ready yet, but what that we're considering doing is to change that, is to introduce a performance-based payment system that at least one or two other sitters are using, although most other sitters are still using the one that I'm talking about. And that's what I say is that, like all other businesses, you do the right, you invoice, and then we pay you for that. It has huge, especially for municipalities, as well as for the sitter internally, it has huge implications on our ability and those of municipalities to get the work going and to process all the processing that would have to be required at those intervals of submitting those invoices. But it is a matter that we are now reconsidering once again. That was on spending on inactive projects. I've explained this one. All the NAPSITA has the role that must train across. I think I remember that matter at one, I don't think the CITA has exclusive wisdom on speaking as to why it is the case. My own view is that all institutions in the country have got a specific mandate. Ours is drawn from the Skills Development Act in terms of what needs to be done, and we can't run away from that mandate. We are talking here local government because we are the local government, the local government portfolio committee with stakeholders of local government. But the model of the tax is one that is across all sectors of the economy, such that you then, number one, could not have differently for the sector. And I think that's an important thing to understand. All of them are established in terms of the Skills Development Act with a specific mandate. That mandate, first and foremost, is to do sector field planning, as we explained, and then to receive the funding in the form of the levies and to disperse it for training. And to do quality assurance. Do quality assurance and register learning programs and do quality assurance. CITAs don't by themselves do the training. We do all these things that support the training and we fund it, but we do not do it ourselves, and that's an important thing to understand. Now, this CITA...
I'm going to call upon you, number two.
This CITA had all the problems of governance and other things, which necessitated it for it to be placed under administration. Most of the things have now been corrected, hence the CITA is coming out of administration, but I think it has always been a view that you don't then, because there are problems, just like you can't close down a municipality because it is in a state where it requires to be put under administration. I think it is the view of the department, and I'm sure even legally they couldn't have a different view. You don't then say the CITA should not do what it's supposed to do, because the CITA has a legal mandate, a legislative mandate. You then have to correct that which was wrong with the CITA. And I'm sure, as the one other member said, we will spend a lot of time as COPA getting into how we have corrected that. But the mandate of the CITA has never changed, and it could not change.
Okay. Thank you very much. I want to move over to the ALGA presentation and basically pose a question. Are there specific questions to some
questions?
Yeah, what question is that?
Chairperson, Director General, the Deputy Director General said that I shouldn't be asking questions. I'm afraid I should, and it's a prerogative of members in committee to ask questions on a point of order. It is a prerogative of committees to hold you, Director General, to account.
But but
and to answer, questions. I don't have
to
submit the questions to you or anyone else. I can ask them here. My point is this. The question that I asked was whether or not NISA has the financial skills in order to award tenders in terms of the PMMA and the MFMA. And that was not answered. They went off on a tangent on the Sienza, which I used as an example of poor implementation.
But I gave up
I'm asking whether or not they have the knowledge of that internally to do that.
I gave up to do with your question is to note and that the relevant people must really reflect on it quite deeply. It's a very relevant question from the point of view of what has happened and the whole question of building capacity to move into the future. I want to move to some questions on Salga. Salga?
Yes, sir. My question was misunderstood as well.
Okay.
I did not say that the budget got 1.6 billion. I only asked the member, I know he said he wasn't there, but I only asked one simple question. Do you believe these requests that we are getting are realistic? If yes, how are you dealing with it since the department is running with a budget of around only 400 million? Just a simple question. So that I wanted to see whether you are borrowing from Paul or Peter, or if this is reality, how are we going to address it as a committee member?
No, thanks, member. I apologize. I did indeed misunderstand the question. Chairperson, I'll answer the question in this way. The requests are realistic in the sense of the need that is out there. There's no doubt about that. In fact, we should be doing even more than that. So in terms of saying we have all these people who require this training and that training, they are realistic in that sense. Unfortunately, Chairperson, they are also unrealistic in the sense of our ability. And when I say our, in the main municipality's ability currently, to be able to manage, even if the flag were there, which, as we have said, they are not. I spent a lot of time talking about how they are unable or they have been unable to do even the little that we have been giving them now. So the answer is, in terms of our ability to manage that, even if the flag were there, unfortunately, at the present moment, until something drastic happens in local government, they are not realistic in terms of that, as request from people who say, if you give us this, we'll be able to manage it. Thanks, sir.
Yeah. Linked to this 1.4 billion 400, because the question that I asked initially, which is now being responded to in part now, was in the event that the money is not enough, maybe I should put it this way, what cost or who else are you partnering with to offset some of those costs? That was maybe the context which I asked the question, because to say something drastic, that could be until, you know, the end of time. If it doesn't happen, what happens when you say the need is genuine?
Well, at the moment, Chair, we do not have many partnerships that come to the party at the level of funding. There are many partnerships. We work with institutions of higher learning on research. We work with other CETAs on certain projects, and yes, to a very little extent up to now, we do co-fund projects, but I don't even see that as being significant towards addressing the 1.6 billion versus what we have. And so at the moment, by and large, we do not have partnerships that assist us to fund. You will have, and we do have, a project here and there where even a corporate will say that we are running a learnership, or we've got space for so many. If you come on board, we will match you, that type of thing. We do have those, but at a very minimal extent up to now. Maybe, Chair, at a generic level, I have always been saying, and it will now happen much more stronger than it has been happening, although it has been happening. I spoke earlier on about how we work together, including as we develop the SST, identifying critical and care skills, all of those things. The stakeholders have always been involved. But perhaps what will strengthen much more formally the coordination that we talk about, that will ensure that together we sit around the table and agree to say that each year, what are we what are the focus areas, what should be focus areas, what should we be funding for each year. And when we, again, and it's supposed to always work that way, but there are some challenges, but it's when we have the board formally constituted again, because if we recall that all these stakeholders are the accounting, are different components of the accounting authority that approve the funding and all the projects prior to each financial year beginning. So it will definitely be much more strengthened at that level, with all the potential still challenges that it comes with. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. Is the new CEO eager to say a word or two before we move to study?
So, I don't think I really will add value, but thank you.
Well, thank you very much. I just went bad, my boy. Thank you very much. Okay, we'll now move on to Salga. Are there questions to Salga? Are there questions to the Salga presentation? Or is it no debt? Maybe responses from Salga?
Thank you, Chair. The question I noted were to others were responded to during the LGC department. The other one was that how Salga is monitoring the training of council. There are two issues. One is the training prevention is initiated by Salga. our monitoring through our offices in the province. But there are initiation of training by municipality themselves, which are done through speakers of the capacity building right in the office of the speaker in municipality. So therefore that monitoring is done at that level. The other one was the salary disparity in terms of your officials understood honorable Mutal. I think when they are going to present the issue of senior managers, so we see that there won't be parity in terms of paying salary to officials. Because you've got grades in the municipality, you've got 1 to 8. 8 are your metros, which is not all of them, 8 metros, but on the same level, in terms of like when you deal with your issues of grades in the municipality. Therefore, in other municipalities in rural areas, they rely on grants through your Division of Revenue Act, and so on. So we weren't able to have parity to pay all your officials the same in all municipalities, 268. So therefore, those will be those who are paid lower in terms of the grading of that municipality. I think I attempt to respond on the terms of the salary disparity.
Thank you very much. Well, let's put one item on the agenda for the follow-up. Mayor.
Thank you very much. And greetings to the leadership. There were questions also on employment of managers. And quite a number of different statements were made with regards to that, including the change of deployment, which was recorded by some of the members. I just want to outline the process briefly of adjustment of posts existing in different municipalities. In terms of post description as well as minimum requirements, there is no such thing called cater deployment or a cater. I understand Honorable Nyambo is saying all of us are cater.
I request the respondent to help us with so that we are not engaging on those things because we are living in South Africa. We know what is happening.
No, another question was asked. The member has the right to respond. Please respond.
Thank you, Honorable Chair.
And respond to the Chair.
That's true.
But there is involved in some conversation with somebody else.
It is true, Honorable Chair, that there are cases where either relevantly under an unqualified incumbent end up getting hosted. With regard to the question raised earlier on by Honorable Mchacho, what do we do with that? As the employer body, we advise our member municipalities to revert those kinds of appointments. But having said that, I do want to refer the Honorable Members
to the address in terms of what are the minimum requirements before we consider the applications that have first come to different member municipalities. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Colleagues and members, we don't have much time in our hands. I want to propose that the next item, which is item 4, on the Congress report on the implementation of the regulations for the appointment of municipal managers, Section 56 managers. That's what we do. We don't go through a lengthy report, but we just answer the question, what kind of progress has been recorded since our last meeting? So to get a response from both SALGA and the department. I know Member gave a longer presentation, but we can just zoom on in the relevant slide. And that will go a long way.
Thank you, Chairperson. Teboho Modla Shopping, our Chief Director for this area of works, Chair, will be making the brief emphasis point as you have requested, Chair. And we will hope, in doing so, we will answer some of the previously asked questions as well. Thanks.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. The report will be on the impact that the regulations have been made. I must, from the onset, indicate that these regulations came into being on the 17th of January 2014. Therefore, it will relate to appointments that were made for senior managers after the promulgation of the regulations. After the regulations, the department conducted workshops in all provinces for us to capacitate provincial officials, councillors, municipal managers, and senior managers dealing with HR matters in relation to the uniform interpretation of the regulations. This is a slide indicating the number of workshops, the number of officials that are present during those particular workshops that we conducted with the rule of our municipalities. This particular slide deals with the processes. The process is as follows. That once the municipalities make an appointment of a senior manager, a report will be given to the MEC within 40 days. The MEC will then have to report to the minister. The minister will then look at the documentation that supports the appointment, and in instances where the appointment was done irregularly, then the municipality will be advised to either reverse the application or to re-advertise. And in the instance that the municipality is unable to do as requested by the MEC and the minister, we are to approach the court for this interim order for that particular appointment to be made null and void. In a nutshell, any appointment made contrary to regulations are null and void ab initio. We have since monitored the appointments of all senior managers in municipalities, received reports from municipalities, and this is the effect of our monitoring exercise in those municipalities. In case there were 16 appointments made after January 17, and there were 4 appointments that were not compliant. And on this slide, on the slide, it indicates those municipalities that were those appointments were not made, and with regard to the corrective measures that we have taken for those municipalities to appoint appropriately. In this respect, there were 2 who were not compliant in Gauteng. That is up to date because 1 appointment that was made regularly. KZN, there were 6 non-compliant, and the steps that we have taken, the instances where the MEC have approached the court for a detailed order, and the instances where appointments have been made irregularly, we have advised the municipalities to reverse the appointment, and we have advised the instances where we do not do that as indicated above, we then proceed to approach the court for a detailed order. Not just the same. We have also included in our APP the mechanism to monitor appointment of senior managers. It is so that the department also has just completed the development of an electronic monitoring tool where we analyze and we monitor the appointment of senior managers. So from now onwards, all appointments made those appointments are reported to the MEC and to the ministers. You can get, in instances where we realize that the appointments were not done according to the regulations, we then advise accordingly in relation to the advertisement, the advertisement of those particular positions. We have also developed a database of dismissed staff. It was one of the requirements of the qualified personnel in municipalities is for them not to have previous conviction in relation to misconduct. And when we receive documentation from municipalities, we look at all those other things and advise them further accordingly that this particular person is not qualified because he was previously found guilty of a misconduct, alternatively, that he resigned before the misconduct, and what are the functions there. Different functions in relation to different categories of misconduct, and we have the database where you advise municipalities when they need appointments. And this is just an indication of the figures in relation to only all provinces, the number of business workers, the number of staff members who resigned prior to the finalization of the procedures. This database also capacitates municipalities to look at a better check of all those potential senior managers in municipalities. We have also, as part of the regulations, started last year with the notice where we regularize the salaries of our senior manager. That's one question in relation to that particular process. We are now in the process of publishing the second notice this year that will also re-look into the categorization of municipalities. The intention of the whole process is for the minister to at least set a minimum and standards in relation to salaries of municipal managers. We want to do away with instances where municipalities are paying high above the market-related salaries and need to regulate that. That is part and parcel of what we'll be doing with the second notice that is coming into effect in the near future. We have also, in the regulations, put in the disclosure basis and interest of all senior managers who have been appointed, so that should be the mentality should keep track of in order for us to check potential corruption in municipalities. There are challenges, however, in relation to the regulations that we have. One is in relation to the uncertainty of section 67.7 that relates to either managers who are directly accountable to municipal managers are to be appointed on a fixed term or on a permanent basis. We need to look into this so that there is an understanding of all municipalities in relation to what will be the contractual obligation of all those managers appointed who are accountable to the municipal manager. We have also had a challenge in relation to giving information from MECs once an appointment has been made, and we have also had information that are coming very scarcely in relation to municipalities submitting to us once this medical process of senior manager has been completed. However, we have taken this further step to look at the rewarding.
No, the still under the system is establishing whether there is progress. Another thing is as well as the communication process and opportunity to educate
Yes, in brief, what we are saying is we have put the mechanism in place to monitor the appointment of municipal managers and managers accountable to them, and we are advising and we are also supporting municipalities through by hands on support by being part of the interview panel when new appointments are made, and also to make sure that suitably qualified personnel are appointed. And upon appointment of qualified personnel, we advise municipalities correctly as opportunity, we approach the host for them to declare those appointments are employed. That is the impact of our day.
Chair, may I just add one quick thing, please? Chair, yes, the progress that we've seen in the past 18 months of the regulations being in motion is that it's brought about a major transformative energy. Like for us, to the slide that we showed you with 89% of compliance of all appointments made since the 17th of January, that's a good sign. That tells us a story of progress made. It shows you we know exactly where are the non-compliance happening, we act immediately. There's also progress that we've seen from vigilant citizens and organizations, be it trade unions, be it political organizations, be it concerned citizens, that brings to the department and the minister's attention to say, we are aware that X has been appointed here, X do not qualify with the regulations. Therefore, do something about it. And we've intervened in a number of those cases as well. We've also put increasing positive pressure on MECs. Every minute that we have, the minister have the MECs present a report on progress, on compliance with these very important legislative provisions, right? So MEDs are really also held to account to say, here's a non-compliant issue, what are you doing about it? Speed up the processes, doing nothing is not an option. So those are the key areas of progress that we are, our team chairperson. We are in the process of finalizing regulations in consultation with all the parties, everyone below senior management level, and that's the next wave of transformation that we bring, that we can bring uniformity across the system. But the progress, it has turned up the heat on the system. You know, the unhappiness that we're seeing about municipal managers wanting to dictate their own pay to their councillors, that's the theme of the past, right? So there's a number of things that needed to be corrected in the system that's now being addressed. And we're also picking up implementation lessons, that things that we would need to refine going forward. But it's a good direction that we're heading on, Chair.
In the interest of time, I'm not going to slide the whole presentation. I will just highlight some of the critical issues that I looked at the presentation. Let me just at the outset in the Katasawa also really supports his municipality to implement these regulations. And we share the sentiment of SATA that these regulations should be implemented. And some of the areas where we provide assistance are in terms of developing the performance management system, policies on recruitment and selection, organizational structures, and then job evaluation. And particularly local government sit out late because SAWA actually applies for funding for from the CETA for training our performance management system as well as the competency assessment. So we deem that as two very important parts. Let me then just indicate that I want to move to slide 5. Just in our interactions with municipalities, there's a number of issues that have come up that we just want to highlight and share with the Portfolio Committee. And five broad strategic issues. The one is that we definitely need to balance the institutional and administrative issues in the local government with the protection of the constitutional integrity of local government. Although we recognize that some form of regulation is necessary, we must just not regulate to such an extent that the constitutional integrity of the sphere is being affected. Then we acknowledge that there's a need to professionalize the municipal administration, and we need to look at the instruments we use to do that. Then also we have to look at the relationship between the regulation and the notion of differentiation when we regulate. Also regulations, relationship between the regulation and the Public Administration Management Act and processes related thereto. And then the nature and extent of the use of regulations and notices to regulate local government. Now in our implementation, and this is a lot of questions that we received or aspects that have been raised with SAWA by municipalities when we support them in terms of the appointment. There are four main criteria. One deals with other regulation in terms of the conditions of service, some project issues, the upper limits and the application of competency requirements, and some challenges with regard to competency requirements. Just in terms of our own regulation, our members have indicated that as much as we understand that there should be conditions of service for the senior managers and that they should be parity in terms of the conditions of service for the senior managers and the MMs, some institutions have indicated that the regulations border on the verge of over-regulations in the sense that it actually prescribes very fine refund processes. For example, if you look at the leave, if the regulations actually determine how you must determine accrued leave or pro rata leave. Now, municipalities already have a system in place in terms of policies and that it has adopted, now it needs two policies. So we have, as much as we support the regulation of the conditions of service, and some of these final issues can be dealt with in terms of the policies of the municipalities, and it does not need to be regulated to such an extent. And that once again relates to the constitutional integrity of municipalities to determine its own internal processes. So we say, as much as we support the conditions of service, we think it's a bit of a regulated thing. On process issues, the process is heavily process orientated. The process are described in fine detail, and that sometimes do lead to some tensions within a municipality, and this comes from our members. One of those issues is the fact that the MM must chair the selection panel, which also includes councillors and executive councillors as it is. And that sometimes creates tensions with political principle, where you now have an official appointed and now the type will be seen as dictating to executive councillors. Then all on the shortlisting process, there's sometimes a difference of opinion with the full panel that has the shortlisting or the chair in or after consultation with the panel. And then a question that's quite often raised with us is, what is the role of the executive mayor or the executive committee represented by the mayor in this process? Because in the council process, the mayor or the executive mayor has submitted a call to council. However, sometimes the executive mayor is not on the panel, they must do oversight, but they're not fully part, and the council has the executive committee or the executive mayor accountable for these processes while they're not directly involved, and that does cause some tension in some instances. Then just on the upper limits of the salaries, let me just say, SAGA has always indicated that it supports the principle of limiting the salaries, but there are some internal consequences that SAGA do have a challenge with. And the one is that we acknowledge that we now have two categories of employees, but now the categorization of the municipalities for determining the salaries, we have two different systems. One is the task one, and the one then determined in terms of the upper limits. And the result of that has been that with regard to middle managers in a number of municipalities, and that is cutting across from the lowest municipality up to very high in terms of categorization, but some of the middle managers earn more than the senior managers that they report to, and that is based, and we've looked at this, this is where tasks were supplied, the job was evaluated in terms of tasks, and the salaries are in accordance with the collective bargaining agreement. Then we also are very concerned about the low capacity, low income municipalities. And we feel that it's biased against those municipalities where the salaries are in certain instances so low that it actually acts as a deterrent to employing professional qualified people and below the aging of people. There's once again though that vacancies in those senior positions are one of the factors that impact on the audit outcomes. So we're very concerned about the salaries. And we feel that the lower end perhaps is moved up a bit, and that is also based on the fact that regardless of whether you work for a blowback in Limpopo or the city manager of the city of Cape Town, your legislative obligations and your accountability remains the same. The amount of money you account for might be less, but the basic accountability remains the same, and we feel that the range between the grade 10 and the grade 1 in terms of the proposing notice is far too wide, and that we cannot get in those local presence spaces where we actually need the skills, we cannot get them. Then also some of the less capacitated municipalities have indicated to us that the process required to motivate the market premium is long and expensive, and sometimes these small municipalities battle just to get to that point. It's also been indicated that the minister seems reluctant to grant exemptions from these regulations, and a lot of applications have not been agreed to. And then another aspect that's been raised is there's no clear indication, and the status are uncertain of how a person moves from a midpoint to a maximum package over the contract period of 5 years within the municipality, and what the prospects are, how do you deal with this aspect. And then just in terms of the proposed new notice, we are concerned about the 3-year ban before you can actually move up. and we still believe that the seller sales are biased against the small niche sellers. Then just in terms of the competence framework, I will not go into all of this, but this is what is required in terms of the proper regulations. There are certain core competencies and then legal competencies. However, our concern is that with the various service providers that have these competency, test these competency requirements, they don't all use the same battery mix and test the same. So although for the same position you will have similar tests applied to the same applicant, in general we are concerned that there's not one standard test and there are still variations, and we are trying to address that, but we have a bit of a concern about the assessment landscape. And the second question is this really applicable to the competencies we're looking for here? It is not general competencies, because the leadership competency in a municipality might be different from a company. So we just have a few concerns on that. And then also with regard to the National Treasury competency requirements, we also sort of the view that there should be an attempt to combine these two competency requirements. You've got one competency requirement that's tested, that's based on experience, and then you have one that are kind of complete modules, and you're deemed to have the competencies. But we still feel that these two must fit much closer to each other. And then, of course, with the national treasury competencies, we still don't have the recognition of prior learning. Then just, sorry, I just want to get another point. Then, sorry, Jay, we're nearly done. We just also have a concern with regard to the once again the competency testing, and we know that the Employment Equity Act also has certain requirements in terms of competency assessment, and they don't necessarily correlate with what's required in terms of the regulations, and it sometimes becomes difficult to marry these two aspects. And then also, Clause 16 of the of the regulations indicates that you can apply from the local government CETA for funding to apply this competency assessment test. But some of the municipal managers have indicated they just want certainty on whether CETA can indeed fund these competency assessments, and how the focus of funding from CETA sometimes impacts on the selection process, because you've got a limited period where you can apply for funding and where CETA needs the funds, whereas municipality cannot always dictate when they'll have to do the competency assessment, or whether it was a general provision made by CETA. So we think we should just verify that. And SARGA has also conceptualized the competency assessment model, and the implementation is subject for funding submitted to local CETA, as we have indicated before. So that, yes, and then the other point that we made, that the Employment Equity Act has got certain requirements different from what is required from in terms of regulations, and we must just make sure that those are complied with.
Slide
number 15. And then to finalize, once again to highlight the fact that some municipalities still don't have performance management systems in place, but we are working very hard at SARGA to assist them with that, and also, as was indicated, we've applied for funding to train municipalities on that. We've also our internal performance management training that we've already started to capacitate municipalities, but we've realized the issue is much bigger, and especially where SARGA now want to introduce or want municipalities to introduce performance management below section 56 and municipal managers. We feel it becomes more important as we also address that. That in short, Chairperson, just to give highlights of some of the challenges in the implementation. Thank you.
Are there questions? Remember, all we're planning to do is to look at where that progress is being made. There may be challenges, the colleague they indicated, but the slides there right at the end, that's what is it that is being done to address those kind of issues. I'm not saying the best answer is possible. That's about the president. Is there progress? Other questions?
Yeah. Thank you, Chairperson. Just a couple of quick questions.
Right. Middle arm, and then the field. Voice on speak. Down. Okay.
Jason, just a couple of quick questions to Cogta. With regard to the progress made on the implementation of the regulations, I think it's great news. I think that there really is progress being shown. I am a little bit concerned about, I want to call it the discretionary nature of the political principles to take action. On slide 9, you refer to the fact that the MP must, within 14 days of receiving the report, take appropriate steps. Then you say that state may include an application to a court for a territory order, and if the MEC fails to take steps, the minister then may take steps contemplated by. In other words, there's a whole lot of discretion sitting there in the hands of the minister. He doesn't have to do anything. He can sit on his hands and watch. Surely we need to amend the regulations or the legislation to say that the minister must act if there is non-compliance with the act. We need to force the minister and the MEC to take action. So I'd just like some clarity on that one. Then, Chair, and I'll give you an example of that on the next page, Kaoteng. The NEC is considering the territory order. He's thinking about it. But he might like the guy and decide, well, hey, you know what? I'm not going to take any action against this person. And then passes it on to the minister. The minister then takes over, and the minister says, well, I should also like the guy. I'm not going to take action. And then just come to the benefits, the disclosure of benefits and interest. Chair, one of the things that has long been a concern of mine is municipal officials, and particularly senior management, doing business with the municipality and government. And my question is, when is this government going to take steps to implement regulations to prevent municipal officials from doing business with government? That's the first part. And the second part is, when are we going to prevent senior officials from also having outside businesses that they run on a part-time or full-time basis? Especially if you are a Section 56 or Section 57 manager, that is a full-time job. And you can't then be running a bottle store or a consulting business on the side. And we need to start implementing regulations to prevent these things from happening. Now, I'm not saying that they can't have shares in the company. I'm not saying they can't have directorships or something like that. But where a business is a hands-on business and they are managing it, that's a different story. And I'd really like to know what progress is being made to prevent that kind of thing from happening. So these people are focusing their attention on the municipalities where they are supposed to be delivering.
Okay.
yeah, I just want to find out here from Cogta the notice that is contemplated that the minister must issue a notice in terms of the regulations. How far is that process and when is it going to be concluded? That's a question. But also, I'm worried, Chair, because from the presentation that we are receiving from SALGA, it appears as if there's not been a consultation with SALGA, so that SALGA can be able to raise this concern that they were placing on the committee with the department. I know that this is secondary legislation for which as a committee, we are not able to say do this and not do that, because it is entirely at the discretion of the minister. And therefore, issues that SALGA is raising, perhaps there should have been a platform for SALGA to raise these issues. So I'm repeating this because it is a concern of the committee that we have observed over a period of time, that there seem not to be synergy between the department, COCTA, and organized local government in the form of SALGA. Because quite often the issues that comes in front of the committee, you pick up that there are divergent views from both COCTA and SALGA. and we would have thought that some of the issues would then have been consulted upon before they even get presented to the committee. So that is a serious point of concern. When are we going to have that kind of synergy? Because some of the issues raised by Sarah, you pick up that they are substantive issues, which addresses certain specific issues about the notice and the regulations that are coming. So I just want to find out if there has been such an engagement. It will greatly help the committee where all of you move on the same wavelength. And lastly, Chair, the interpretation arising from the deletion of Section 57. What is the correct interpretation? Is the situation currently that all other senior managers do not have to be appointed on a fixed term contract? Or what is exactly the situation, because other municipalities still continue to appoint senior managers through fixed term contract. Others, they've done away with that provision. So I just want to find out what is the correct interpretation, because it's a complete departure from the object of the Act. So all senior managers performing the same task at that high level, all of them have to be appointed on a fixed-term contract. But now this section has been deleted, and it's creating a lot of confusion, Chair, which I think that both the department and ourselves at some point, we need to provide clarity on this thing.
Chair, shall we proceed with our responses?
No, the question is moved out.
Looking at the database of dismissed staff, I think some provinces are not genuinely dealing with this issue of corruption, because if you look at Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal and Western Cape, a number of dismissed staff is quite a huge number, but some provinces hardly have a single member dismissed, given rampant corruption taking place in the municipalities. Mpumalanga Hill, Northern Cape Hill, and I don't think that there are no cases of corruption in these municipalities. I think some municipalities are not generally dealing with this issue of corruption. This is my feeling. It's my concern that really some provinces are not hands on corruption. They might be covering one another. At municipal level, they might be some covering some politicians and officials working together. That's my feeling. Because at the municipality where I come from, 13 years in that municipality, in the province, very big problem. What I've realized in the first presentation is that most of the questions that we had for OGCS really were captured in a presentation. That's what I realized. Because some staff, especially MLs, really sort of just, increase their salary. Last week I was at home at our local municipality. The story then that the new MM was appointed early this year, moved the salary from 956 to 1.3 unilateral without cut until resolution. So these are some of the issues that really a big concern to some of us. We have said in this municipality for years.
Where we have specifics, I mean, I'm not discussing from this issue, but where we have specifics, please reduce that into writing. We'll pass it on to the minister and make sure that the issue is followed up. We have thousands of us, just a bit more investigation, but make the division available.
Thank you.
It's on the basis of that together, especially in fact in this kind of corruption. Thank you very much. Are there comments from the Sarga and the department? No one's come.
No, I'm covered by Philip, Chair. On the slide number 9, also covered me on the decision to the on it. But, Chair, it also shows that no improvement in this understanding with the answer from Salka and also from the department. That means we have a technical director. I think the problem is just 1%. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah,
Chair.
Yeah,
that's
right
from
the
region.
And,
I think
we have to...
Without disputing what the honourable member has said, I don't think it is a fair indication of the presentation that we make that we are not engaged with COPS. The high range of application. Perhaps part of the challenges of regulation, when you are the regulator on the one hand and engaging with an association representing municipalities, is that perhaps the interest in the view might not automatically connect, and we've been given an assurance that this, in the various engagements that we've had with COPTA, the most reasonable assurance was that we will be given more time to take the issues that we have raised in our forum of principal managers, which took place last week. Assurance we've been given is that all the applications that we've made will receive due consideration before the notice is in fact issued. So, a reflection of what we are making here, honourable member, is not in itself a reflection that those inputs have been made for the first time. It's just that we felt it's important for the committee to be seized with the nature of the input that we've made as part of the consultation process. But we accept that the minister has a prerogative, so we feel comfortable knowing that the issues which have raised historically, some of them have been remedied over time, while others may perhaps need that attention. I don't really honourable member, give you that assurance that the nature of the presentation unfortunately reflects that these are two parties, all these things, one thing, and I need to oppose one another. I don't think it's necessarily that context.
Right.
Yeah,
please proceed. Sarga.
Well, I think Rio tried to cover the issue that the nature of local governments is that when Talga and Cocta see, will somewhere agree, someone will disagree that the way things are presented, we are not able to agree on local issues, but I think the nature of local governments will not agree on everything.
Chair, my colleague wishes to respond to a few specifics and then I'll round off with
Chair, in relation to the issue of the discretionary clause, giving the minister the right whether to take certain steps and anything. The manner in which the regulations were crafted was with first the understanding that there will be an engagement in instances where the provincial department responsible for lower one is aware, or the entity is aware, an appointment has been made to contract a version of the of regulations. That the responsible is engaged. Today, you have appointed a person who is qualified to go and retire this particular state. So, in instances where that particular advice from the NEC or from the minister is not taking heed of, then the process is then of getting the better order. But I agree that maybe you need to fortify, you need to amend the regulation to defend that it should be something that should. That should be done in the absence of misbehaviour within the process of moving to that. We looking at the disclosure of interest, we are saying that once it is found that there was no disclosure or there was incorrect disclosure, obviously in the mission it is stated that that to be in contradiction of the code of conduct of an employment contact of that particular official. So consequences will follow in those instances where there is wrong decision or there is no decision at all. There will be consequences. The law provides, the regulation provides that. Yes. Now, in relation to senior manager doing business with municipalities, that has been taken into, it will be also considered very fortified again when we look into regulations. My issue in relation to senior managers doing business on the side, I'm looking into that, but I'm just questioning that the constitutional impediment in relation to this, that can we really regulate that a senior manager might have not engaged in business activity apart from the legislation. We look into that and we look at the constitutional implications of that particular provision. Should we improve the regulation? I have some doubts in relation to that if we look into that. You're saying with regard to senior managers doing business apart from doing business outside of the work but my check as Graham said now is are we within the law we can regulate that they are not supposed to be engaging in business activities whatever the report means for the case.
There are many laws on this question. What we need to do is just look at what the law says. But the law seeks specifically to prohibit managers, senior managers, doing business with the same municipality and government institutions that they are involved in. There's also an attempt, to show that, in fact, this should not just apply to senior managers. It must apply to all people who work in the municipality, the staff. If you want to comment on this, it's an important point. There should be confusion at this point.
The supply chain management regulations issued in terms of the Municipal Finance Management Act actually determines that no employee of a municipality, a provincial or a national sector department or an MP or MPL or councillor might do business with any municipality. So it dealt with in that. And then the Public Administration Management Act actually took it further to also now prohibit public service officials from doing business with the state or municipality. So there are provisions, although it's not in these regulations, there are regulations dealing with it.
Yes. No. Why don't we say, without getting too much into the funding technicalities, but there's a very clear attempt and steps being taken by government to prohibit people from doing business with the same municipality in which they're involved. I'm sure some government will be away with that. Comptroller should be very clear on the matter as well. In fact, the schools are tightening. That's the offensive, as we speak at the moment. The schools are tightening. It's going to become very, very difficult for any individual in the municipality to be involved in business in the same municipality. If there are still gaps, no gaps at all, I think there's. But so that's intention that you need to by all of us.
In the chair, I might just conclude,
yes? Yes.
You're absolutely right, chair. There's no confusion, no reluctance that it's about it. It's a key part of our anti-corruption strategy, and our minister is exceptionally firm on that. And it's making sure that it's not just the municipality that you work in, it's the point that was made by Laurette, any municipality, right? So that I don't sit in Gauteng do business with a municipality in the Western Cape, at whatever level of the system that we're on, we need to look at
the operation. So the provision applies at the level of political people, it also applies at the level of managers and officials.
Indeed.
If there are gaps, there's very, very clear indication that all of those gaps are being closed down. Yes.
We are also in talks with the Chief Procurement Officer of National Treasury to tighten up some of those very smart maneuvers that we've seen people make were part of those gaps that's been closed off. Chair, then the remaining questions about when will the notice be out. By law, the notice needs to be ready for full implementation on the 1st of July of every year, and that deadline will be met. We are finishing up the last part of consultations, and we will be, our minister has been briefed all along the way, and will be finalizing the revised notice, taking into consideration that which we've heard and what the progress that we need to make from notice one to notice two about the improvements we need to bring about, and also what are things that will be kept for, you know, notice three and notice four going forward, right? The point about the engagements has already been made, but just to emphasize, a number of formal and informal engagements have been taking place with SOGA, so that's definitely not a correct observation or appearance. Also, you know, synergy doesn't mean consensus, right? There can be a very healthy tension between the nature of our existence as SOGA and as a national department, and there will always be a measure of healthy tension, and we all just need to keep it constructive. But it's about the point that the councillor made, that, you know, room for disagreement, and in the spirit and substance of that agreement and or disagreement, and we are open to be influenced, and vice versa. On the database, you're correct, honourable member, that we are busy interrogating and cleaning up where there's been non-submissions of information, where there's still large volumes of information due. We've got teams working with different provinces and municipalities to get that outstanding information in, to verify and check the credibility of that information so that we can manage it appropriately. But your observation is spot on. Chairperson, then just lastly from my side, thank you very much. Just for the record, and I'm sure it will reflect in the recording, we did answer the question earlier when one of the committee members asked, what is the capacity in MISA in terms of supply chain management to advise or to make tender awards? The words that we used were, MISA does not make tender awards in municipalities. The municipalities does that itself. Right? MISA provides specific information that might be used by municipalities in their decision-making process. So we hope that satisfies that answer. And if there's anything else that's needed from us in regarding that, we'll be happy to provide follow-up information. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
I
think there's one question that has not been responded to. on the interpretation of the deletion of section 57, but I think on the our observation regarding the relationship still remains our observation based on a couple of interactions between yourself and Sarah. I wouldn't expect you to say no, there is that problem, but that remains our observation and we'd like to engage on that issue. But can you just clarify this interpretation?
The understanding of the deletion of that particular section from our side was that managers are accountable to municipal managers who then be appointed on a permanent basis because that particular clause has been removed. However, in our presentation, we have indicated that actions to be taken, that in order to remedy that, we need to re-look into the particular section and come up clearly with some sort of amendment that will give one message to municipalities, because you are correct. As of now, some municipalities appoint on a term basis, others on a full-term basis. But we have suggested that we have to look at amending section 57.7 to give clear interpretation of what the legislature intended in relation to that particular interpretation.
Yes.
Just to allow the sense of the committee, this is actually one point where we said we didn't open against synergy, but we agreed between COCTA and SOGA. There was a huge impulse initially about the deletion of Section 57, and what you see in the regulations currently was actually an agreement of the intensive and interpretative conversation between the two parties, where we then say that in terms of the regulations now provide that the municipality appoint full time unless certain criteria are met that are specified in the regulations, then the municipality can appoint on a fixed term, and that is based on the discretion that we believe municipalities have. But that's, I think, one of the best cases in point where we really negotiated and consulted and agreed to include that section. So just to show that we do work together. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Let's just close the meeting. That should be well for today. So we note the presentations, we note the engagement, but clearly, I think that the issues discussed today were not really meant to be discussed and concluded. today. So when it's got some other time, Member Mteba, to make another follow up so that we can have the ongoing way a sense of what kind of progress is being made as we continue to care for these matters. So we're not part of the date of the next meeting by the department. And for now, let's be smooth. Thank you very much.